measles is back is the same as the conversation that we had about racism last week. Is it the same reason? Is measles back for the same reasons that racism is back in fashion, as being demonstrated by various politicians? But we are beginning with a politics question of a very different flavour. In fact, I'm willing to wager that you can't guess the question I'm about to ask you for all the tea in China.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, local election staff are warning they face an uphill battle to be ready for voting in May following a government U-turn. Plans to delay polling day in 30 areas of England have been abandoned after ministers received new advice. Reform UK had sought legal action over the move and now want ministers to publish the new guidance. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock has admitted to LBC the change is not a good look for the government.
I accept that things have to change. We've had some very big changes in number 10, which I'm sure you will have followed in recent days and weeks. It means now really getting back to core Labour values of building an economy that works for everyone. That is what we're going to see with this government going forward. Sometimes things change.
In the past half an hour, the civil rights icon Reverend Jesse Jackson has died at the age of 84. In a statement, his family say he was a leader to the oppressed, the voiceless and the overlooked around the world. He rose to prominence alongside Martin Luther King Jr. and ran for the Democratic presidential nominee twice in the 1980s. Scotland Yard has told LBC that it's looking into claims that protection officers assigned to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor turned a blind eye to his visits to see Jeffrey Epstein. LBC has spoken to a former senior officer who have raised concerns that some may have withheld information from the Metropolitan Police. Spencer Coovin is a lawyer who represented nine of Epstein's survivors.
If the police were going to be doing their job correctly, they should be finding the protection officers that were assigned to Andrew and interviewing them. So instead of just asking people to step forward, why not go out and actually interview the people you know are there?
There's no suggestion of any criminality by Andrew during his visits to Jeffrey Epstein's island. The former prince has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. The head of the Metropolitan Police says the courts need to stop releasing repeat offender mobile phone thieves. Sir Mark Rowley is also calling on manufacturers and telecom companies to make it harder for criminals to resell stolen devices. Sir Mark's comments come as the force reports a drop in the number of recorded phone thefts in London. And figures show the UK's unemployment rate hit a near five-year high in the final 3 months of 2025. It climbed to 5.2%, up from 5.1%. Wage growth across the country also slowed in the same period. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 52 at 10,522. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England. Later, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning indeed to you. This is going to take you by surprise, but it actually shouldn't. This is one of the maddest things about living in this country at this time. Who's in charge of the national story? Well, that's quite a good question, actually. Who's in charge of the national story? It's a bit lazy, but it's not without merits to book bookmakers to talk about politics. I don't think we've ever done it, but it's you can see why people do. Here's a bookmaker to talk about how the markets are moving. If you were a Tory shill or a sort of Nigel Farage toe tickler, you probably wouldn't be talking to any bookmakers today, even if you did it on a regular basis when the news suited your political agenda, because something extraordinary happened in the markets yesterday. For the first time in a long time, the Labour Party, the Labour government, moved ahead. The margins are small, but they are now the favourites, with Ladbrokes and others, to win the most seats at the next general election. I just want to let that percolate for a moment, and I'd like you to wonder why you didn't know that already. Don't text me to tell me that you did, all right? There's only room for one massive show-off on this programme, and I've already started. Why do you think you didn't know that? I mean, it's not even a rhetorical question. Why do you think you didn't know that yesterday the Labour Party, which could not really have had a worse start to 2026, moved into the favourites position in most betting markets with regard to the question of which party is going to win the most seats at the next general election? Now, the calculus is not such that delivers an overall majority. Things are still very complex. And I'm increasingly having to remind myself that we're still years out from a general election. I think there were probably some members of the cabinet who would do well to remind themselves that we're still years out from a general election. But the reason I began the programme this morning by asking you who writes the national story was because it seems to me that if it was being written fairly or honestly, you would know that. You would know that you live in a country where arguably the most reliable gauge of where public opinion lies has currently got the Labour Party at the forefront of the race to win the most seats at the next general election. That's nuts, right? Is it nuts that you didn't know that, or that it is not being more widely reported, or is it just nuts that it's happening? Because that's a question you can only answer through the lens of reflecting upon who writes our national story. It's so completely at odds with the prevailing winds on most media, whether social or legacy. And today is a terrible day, another terrible day for the government. They abandoned a High Court action to postpone, or rather to allow councils to postpone elections on the outwardly very reasonable grounds that by the time next year comes around, many of the councils to which elections are being held will no longer exist in the form that they would be voted for. But of course, politics isn't about reason or rationality or proper explanations. Politics is about moods and movements. And so portraying Keir Starmer as wanting to abandon elections because he was worried about losing them, when in fact it was councils who wanted to postpone them because they were cognizant of the fact that they wouldn't exist in their current form in a year or two's time, they should have seen that coming from 100 miles away. Once again, bad politics. And also, as I think with the Palestine Action ban, decent lawyers, and they have many decent lawyers, would almost certainly have told them, I think, ironically, and again, something else you probably haven't reflected upon yet in the news, as you hear people celebrating or bemoaning or possibly in a very dull fashion, as I've just done, explaining the story about council election postponements, you probably haven't heard anybody thanking the Lord for the European Convention on Human Rights, under whose auspices, I think, and I've taken advice on this, the fact that they were set to lose in the High Court almost certainly depended. So you have Farage doing a lap of honour over this without mentioning two things. Number one, the bravest man he's ever met continues to lie egregiously on a intergalactic spectacular scale about the results of the US presidential election in 2020. The bravest man Nigel Farage has ever met despises democracy and lies about it daily. And the mooted or the imminent loss in the High Court of the attempts to postpone the elections is almost certainly, but not certainly, so, you know, don't stick this one on the ledger, but almost certainly down to advice taken that would have encompassed the European Convention on Human Rights, which, of course, is a supranational institution that protects populations from governments that are in danger of or accused of eroding democracy. Two more things that you won't hear mentioned in the coverage, much of the coverage of this story today. It's also a very bad week for the Labour Party because of the investigation that Keir Starmer has announced into reports that a think tank called Labour Together had been investigating in an entirely inappropriate fashion journalists who work for Rupert Murdoch. But again, you know, how would you feel if it turned out someone had hacked Rupert Murdoch's phone? Would you feel the same way that you did when you found out that they'd hacked Millie Dowler's? So again, who writes the national story? I don't know. Well, I do know. But it seems to me to be more important this week than ever before because I do this for a living. And I can't believe what Ladbrokes reported yesterday and what YouGov reports today. YouGov has the reform vote plummeting or falling further than it has in over a year, and the Labour Party holding steady just ahead of the Tories. So you've got YouGov putting Labour on 19, the Tories on 18, and reform down from 26 to 23. And you've got Ladbrokes saying that the Labour government, the Labour Party, is currently the party most likely to win the most seats at the next general election. And that, I think you'll agree with me, whatever your politics are, and unless, of course, you're, you know, too busy on Facebook complaining about measles vaccinations and you think it's all part of the deep state conspiracy and that none of these figures can be trusted at all. In fact, the only figures that can ever be trusted are the ones that deliver the results that you like. A bit like Donald Trump claiming that the electoral system in America was completely bent when he lost and having no complaints about exactly the same system when he won. A bit like, I suppose, Nigel Farage complaining about democracy being under threat in this country while describing a man who was probably the biggest liar in living memory with regards to democracy, the bravest man he's ever met. So I do this for a living, and I can't quite square this circle. It's not just the way that things are reported, it's the things that have actually happened. The Peter Mandelson scandal is huge. And albeit that there's epic unfairness in play because sundry European figures, both commercial and political, are seeing their careers end in ignominy when being very good friends with Jeffrey Epstein, with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, seems to provide you with actual career boosts in Donald Trump's regime. In fact, later in the programme, we'll be looking at what Nigel Farage's close friend Steve Bannon has had to do with Jeffrey Epstein and remind ourselves of what Farage had to say about Steve Bannon, who stayed very close friends with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein long after he'd been convicted and while apparently or allegedly or reportedly colluding with Nigel Farage to interfere with British democracy. Did you hear that last bit correctly? Yeah, Epstein's mate, the paedophile's mate, thanked publicly by Farage for all the help that he provided them with during Brexit, long after Epstein the paedophile had actually been convicted of crimes. And what was he thanking him for? Helping to interfere in British democracy. So who writes the national story? Because you probably didn't know that either. Did you know that? Did you know about the Ladbrokes? Did you know about the bookies? Did you know about the polling? Did you know about Bannon, Epstein and Farage, 3 points of a hideous triangle? Did you know about any of this? I don't know. But I do this for a living. And I gave my head the mother of all wobbles this morning because I couldn't quite make sense of it. By rights, if the people that write the national story were reflecting or reporting on the broader picture, by rights, I think Labour would be in single figures, wouldn't they? They certainly wouldn't be the favourites to win the most seats at the next general election. So let me make one thing absolutely clear. This, and you know, I took my medicine last week or the week before from plenty of people who I would probably, or who would probably agree with me about most things, but who felt that I was part of some media conspiracy or scam to undermine Keir Starmer. You have to remember that people, I rely on people who talk to politicians all the time or every day. And they were adamant and quite correct to say that Keir Starmer was in serious trouble. The tanks were being parked on lawns, manoeuvres were underway, attempts to remove him were gathering pace, and then, for reasons that still aren't entirely clear, it all went away. So reporting accurately on the jeopardy in which he found himself was not an act of dishonesty or an act of client journalism or whatever you want to call it. It was a reflection of how serious the situation was. And for reasons I don't fully understand, it becomes or it feels less serious today. He seems to be in less serious trouble today, despite two more big stories, in terms of his own party getting ready to defenestrate him. Two more big stories, the Labour Together scandal, which I think is scandalous, although, of course, Keir Starmer has ordered an inquiry by the Cabinet Office immediately. Whereas Boris Johnson would have described it as an inverted pyramid of piffle and lied about it until the police were knocking on his door, as he did on other matters. But again, I don't know how important that is, but it's relevant to who writes the national story. He should, by rights, be going through another day, another week of somewhat premature epitaphs. They should be writing the obituaries for Keir Starmer's premiership. And they're not. They are reported, or rather, we are aware of surprisingly good polling for the party and favourite status, for now, at the bookies. Two things that seem to me to be so completely at odds with the national story. The national story. That I'm a little bit confused. And I'm asking you this question from a place of confusion and mischief as well. Let me be completely honest with you. I think it's a hilarious question to ask in many ways, but it's also a profoundly serious one because it makes no sense if you rely upon traditional outlets, upon social media, upon legacy media, upon some newspapers or broadcasters. It makes absolutely no sense. In fact, the kind of people that routinely get bookmakers on to their programs or into their pages to reflect upon what the markets possibly mean. There'd be none of that going on today because the markets tell us that the Labour Party is currently favourite to win the most seats of the next general election. That is, I mean, absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? And the question I've got for you is why? Why? In fact, the question I've got for you is, why are Labour doing so well? And that's what I mean by the curious mixture of seriousness and mischief. Because by all accounts, they're not doing well. But according to the latest polling and according to the bookmakers' reports yesterday, they are doing a million times better than even I, as someone who does this for a living, would have attested. In fact, I didn't believe what I was seeing both yesterday and today. So listen, don't waste tuppence ringing me to tell me that you don't believe it either, because I've checked, that's my job, these are the facts, these are the figures. They could change, they could have changed by the end of the programme. In fact, there's probably some little Farage fans out there now putting their pension on Reform to win the next election, and they'll move the market. Did I tell you what happened when I put 50 quid on Kidderminster Harriers to win the FA Trophy? It's such a tiny market and such a big bet for that market that it went from 8-1 to 5-1 the minute I pressed send. I mean, that's the way the markets work. So they reflect what people are spending money on more than they respect other kind of factors. That's the difference between opinion polling and bookmakers. But the bookies, the prices normally follow the polling. We are living in a country where the current government is led by one of the least popular prime ministers in history. That's, again, a matter of fact. But popularity is a strange thing to measure anyway. Who would you rather drove your children home from a party, Keir Starmer or Boris Johnson? Okay, exactly. Who would you rather go for a pint with, Keir Starmer or Boris Johnson? You see, what is popularity? He is, however, according to approval ratings, the least popular prime minister in a month of Sundays, and yet the numbers are positive, the numbers are good. Against the backdrop of what we have been talking about and what has been going on, the numbers are surprisingly good. And listen, the bit that comes from confusion is, I don't understand why, and I'd like you to tell me what's going on, 0345 6060973. And the second part of the question is, pretty simply, Why are they doing so well? That's the mischief bit, because it's a, I mean, even for me, it's a crazy question to ask. So would it be easier, would it be less mischievous if I said, why is it not going worse? Why is it not going worse? Or why is it going well? 0345 60 60 973. Two more terrible stories. Don't make no mistake. The council postponement, terrible politics, should never have put themselves in the position where they could take this spanking. Daily Telegraph pretending that it's all part of some cowardly master plan to avoid elections, when in fact it was an opportunity to allow councils to postpone them until they no longer existed. So instead you're going to be electing people to positions that won't exist by this time next year. And the Labour Together story, although it's a little bit hard for non-Westminster heads to get their noggins around, it involves secret funding of think tanks and it involves inappropriate investigations of journalists. So these are bad stories, and they are this week fast upon the Mandelson stories, fast upon the other U-turns, and yet the picture is surprisingly rosy, and I genuinely don't know why. And it makes me think that when you were attacking me a couple of weeks ago for being part of some media conspiracy to defenestrate Keir Starmer, I wasn't wrong about that, because the tanks were being parked on his lawn, but I think I must have missed something that explained the level of enthusiasm for him and his government and the anger at what you saw being done to him. So I think I missed that. I came off air thinking, I've seemed today to have upset people that I normally don't want to upset. And you upset me, because if you accuse me of lying when I'm not lying, and I'm never lying, if you accuse me of lying when I'm not lying, it's quite hurtful. It's quite personal. If you're a normal, sensible, decent person, if you're a racist nut job, then it's a vote of confidence and a badge of honour for you to insult me or call me a liar. But if you think I'd lie about that, then you really haven't been paying attention. But I do think I must have missed something. And it's coming into focus with these new numbers from both the bookmakers and the opinion polling. And I don't know what it is. So why do you think things are going considerably better for the Labour government than, I'm going to say, than they should be? Or than you might have expected them to be? 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. Don't argue with me about any of the statistical detail that has been supplied. If you're of the mind to disbelieve any numbers or figures or facts that you don't like, then that's fine. You know, you can go off and polish your Donald Trump effigy. But for the rest of us who inhabit reality, this, to me, doesn't make a great deal of sense. Why is Labour beating the Tories in the polls and catching up with Reform? And why are they currently favourites to win the most seats at the next general election? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. And I really, really want to hear what you've got to say, because I don't have, as you've noticed from this introduction, which despite being 20 minutes long, hasn't offered up a single answer to the question that I'm asking. Why? Why aren't things going worse, if you prefer that way of phrasing it? Or if you want to join me in a mission of mischief, why are things going so well? 0345 60 60 973.
LBC.
From rusty chains to fancy frames and everything in between, sign up for British Heart Foundation's iconic London to Brighton bike ride. Because it's not your wheels, it's how you use them. Whether you're a brand new rider or seasoned pro, challenge yourself this June and make your ride matter with British Heart Foundation. And you won't need any fancy gear, just your helmet and your bike. Sign up today, search London to Brighton Bike Ride and keep us beating.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine past storybook castles or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
With LV, I can get my home insurance from just £133. They've made it easy for me to get a great price. And their 24/7 emergency helpline lets me look after what matters to me. Because insurance is simple when it's me and LV.
No wonder we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. Get your quote today at lv.com. 10% of new customers paid £133 or less July to December 2025. LV General Insurance is part of Allianz.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 24 minutes after 10. Mark wonders whether the question that I was bigging up at the top of the show is whether or not people know the difference between cancelled and postponed. But that doesn't matter, Mark, you know, and it might be part of the answer to the bigger question. How can Labour possibly be at 13-8 with Ladbrokes last night when Reform are at 7-4, Conservatives at 11-2? For the first time since May 2025, Labour, the favourites to win the most seats at the next general election. And it makes no sense if you follow the news by any traditional fashion. So what is going on, if you like, beyond or behind the news? And I'd like to apologise to you for not actually knowing. Sometimes I can be a bit performatively ignorant. I say, I don't know, in the hope of mustering you to pick up. I don't know. I don't know. I don't quite get it. James is in Gillingham. Gillingham. James, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Oh, hi, James.
I've spoken to you a couple of times on other subjects, but I'm not that political, but I see the way things are at the moment is Starmer is the best bet for this country. He's made mistakes. He's done some stupid things. But when you see the alternatives, I think people like myself not only are thinking he may be a good bet for the country in the long run, but you see the alternatives. And I think that there's a lot of people like me out there who see the Farages, they see the Kemi Badenochs, they see the useless people who are part of the past government who are in Reform and whatever. And they just think we've had enough of it. And I would rather have...
Well, hang on a minute. Look, the betting markets are giving Labour a tiny lead. The opinion poll has still got the Reform ahead. They're down to 28 from 31. So they're still, depending on what poll that you look at, they're still enjoying quite a nice lead there. So you're describing a movement. You're not describing a destination.
Right. Yeah, but I still think there are a huge amount of people like myself who I'm not brighter than anybody else and I'm not that political, but I still can see that in that there's a majority, I think, of people who realise that the country in these people's hands will be a disaster, as in...
Well, this is the thing that, as you know, the bit that confuses me the most is how you can have the four horsemen of the Krapopolips. Brexit, Boris Johnson, austerity and Liz Truss. And essentially, whether you're looking at Badenoch or Farage, people that were fully on board with all four of those disasters. And you've got a plurality of the electorate saying, well, let's give them another chance. Maybe if we smash ourselves over the head with another frying pan, this time it won't hurt and everything will be fine. But, I mean, why now?
I just think it's... I think there's a sort of a realisation, though, in myself. I've become more interested in this over the last... I should have... Shame on me, really, for not being more political in the past, but I have
Don't beat yourself up.
Few months.
Okay.
Well, I just feel like it is such an important thing, and I just was pondering. I was sitting on the sofa thinking... these people like Nadine Sahawi going to Reform, and you just think, my God, the country could be in the hands of people like that. And it's not that I actually am a massive fan of Starmer. I think he's a really good man. Made some mistakes.
Yeah.
I just don't...
And I mean, the Mandelson appointment, the Winterfuel U-turn, I mean, this week, the humiliation, I think you could call it that. Maybe that's not quite the right word to use in the run-up to the High Court case, looking at the postponement of some elections. I mean, the list is pretty long.
It is. And my heart sinks when I think of the things he's done, and it's so wasteful. Because things like annoying the pensioners off straight away, and annoying the farmers, you know, for want of another word. Yeah. I mean, it was seen such a silly thing to do, and then immediately making yourself that unpopular.
This speaks to his personal unpopularity, because you might think, oh, for heaven's sake, man. But then you find yourself thinking, well, hang on a minute. We're electing a prime minister. We're not electing a game show host or a TV personality. Exactly. We've tried that. And look where it ended, so I don't know. And listen, I'm normally the first to point out, and in fact, I hope I already have pointed out, that one swallow does not a summer make any more than one poll a position makes, or one shift in the betting markets, which is, of course, by definition, never permanent. But I wonder whether James is speaking to something that you recognise, just a slight sense that perhaps right-wing media getting a little bit too excited about the prospect of a Farage premiership has made people think, do you know what, actually, I mean, why on earth would we do that again? Unless you're still persuaded that Brexit was a good idea, that Boris Johnson was a brilliant prime minister, that Liz Truss was an economic genius, more sinned against than sinning, or indeed that the international banking crisis of 2008 was caused by there being too many libraries in Wolverhampton. If you still believe those four things, then we're not really talking about you. But James identifies a possibility. I'd like you to add to the list of why things are going so well. And I can't help saying that without a grin in my voice, but you understand my point. I've explained it tirelessly, exhaustively, for the government at this point in the electoral cycle. 0345 6060 973. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The government has rejected calls for the local government secretary Steve Reid to stand down over the U-turn on local elections. Plans to delay votes in 30 council areas in England have been abandoned after ministers received new legal advice. The leading American civil rights campaigner, Reverend Jesse Jackson, has died at the age of 84. He rose to prominence alongside Martin Luther King Jr. and ran for the Democratic presidential nomination twice in the 1980s. And unemployment has risen to its highest level in nearly 5 years. It increased slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best,
You deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it.
Mm.
For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
33 minutes after 10. Alec in Manchester, Rick in Aberdeen up next. But before that, just because I keep forgetting to bring stuff like this to your attention, and part of the reason is the thing that we talk to Simon Marks about all the time. There's too much to keep track of. There's too much to keep pace with in America per se. But in the Epstein files, particularly, it's almost impossible to get a proper handle on this avalanche of information, some redacted, some not, some hidden, and yet the technology exists to unhide. I mean, all sorts of things. But Steve Bannon, and I got my attention drawn to this story yesterday because he actually mentions LBC in communications with the hideous paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Steve Bannon stayed in very close contact with Epstein long after he was jailed. He did all of the things that Peter Mandelson ended his career for, had his career ended for, and more. Continued associations, enthusiasms. I don't know whether he shared anything that was sensitive, because of course he was very close to Trump at the beginning of the first presidency, but I do know that he was telling Jeffrey Epstein that he was colluding with British politicians to overthrow our democratically elected prime minister. I topped off the show today by saying who writes our national story. Steve Bannon, who has had his toes tickled on an extraordinary scale by elements of the UK media, and who even sat in this very studio spewing his bile, was colluding. He told the paedophile, Jeffrey Epstein, long after Epstein had been jailed for some of his many, many crimes, he told the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein that he was colluding with British politicians to overthrow Theresa May. He could be lying when he talks about getting to know Boris Johnson quite well. He has indeed been told that he is lying by Boris Johnson's either spokesman or by Johnson himself. He didn't use the phrase pyramid of piffle, which he used previously. He called it the biggest load of codswallop I have ever heard. Unfortunately for Boris Johnson, he's become the boy who cried wolf. So even if he's telling the truth this time, he's lied so many times in the past that those of us who care about such things will find it rather hard to believe him without any evidence. And you have Bannon talking about plotting to get rid of Theresa May and being part of Johnson's decision to resign as foreign minister. So we don't know whether or not Steve Bannon was interfering with British democracy via Boris Johnson, but we do know that he was desperately interfering with British democracy via a man who complained about Barack Obama expressing an evidence-based opinion, and as President of the United States of America, about what Brexit would do to Britain. Now, off the top of your head, what possible problem might a racist have with Barack Obama that they wouldn't have with Steve Bannon, even if one of them was the President of the United States, the democratically elected President of the United States of America, and one of them was the far-right friend of a convicted paedophile? I mean, who would you pick if you weren't a massive racist? Who would you trust more? The black democratically elected president of the United States of America, or the far-right friend of a convicted paedophile? Luckily, I don't need you to answer that question, because Nigel Farage already has answered it.
Well done, Bannon. Well done, Breitbart. You helped with this hugely.
Well, that's Nigel Farage thanking the close friend and collaborator of the convicted paedophile, Jeffrey Epstein, for helping with Brexit. Have another listen to it again, because it's quite faded and it disappeared from the internet for a while. I was only reminded of it by this appearance in the Epstein files. Well done, Bannon. Well done, Breitbart, which is a far-right hate site that Bannon founded. You helped with this hugely, talking about Brexit. And complaining today, of course, about the Labour Party postponing council elections as some sort of affront to democracy. So the bravest man Nigel Farage ever met is the one that continues to lie egregiously and deeply dangerously about the 2020 US presidential election result. And the very close friend, the best buddy of a convicted paedophile, is the bloke that he publicly thanked for all his help in getting Brexit over the line.
Well done, Madam. Well done, Bright Bath. You helped with this hugely.
And now we head back to the question of why Labour is having a surprisingly, and no one's more surprised than I am, good week, given there are two big scandals still bubbling away, and the last lot of scandals have barely disappeared into the rearview mirror. It's 10:38, and I don't know how much attention you pay to this, but who writes the national story? Seems to me to be a question I should be asking you every single day. Who writes the national story of a country where that character Bannon can be taking public thanks from Nigel Farage for all his help with Brexit, and then going home and texting the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein about how closely he's working with people like Farage and Boris Johnson? Who writes the national story? Chris is in Walton-on-Thames. What's going on, Chris?
Oh, hello, James. Excuse me.
Carry
Lovely
on.
To speak with you.
Well, we'll see. Don't jump the gun, Chris. It might be a disaster for both of us. Carry on.
This is not why I think the vote has gone up slightly for Labour, but it's what I hope is the reason.
I'm going to have to improve your phone line and speak to someone else. I don't know whether you put on a balaclava helmet while you were on hold. You could be forgiven for doing so. It's very, very cold out there. Rick's in Aberdeen. Rick, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's down to the fact that the opinion polls don't ask the same question as the bookies. The opinion polls tend to ask a question along the lines of, you know, a Westminster general election, who would you vote with if they held tomorrow, who would you vote for? Whereas the bookies will probably be looking at how things will turn out when the election is likely to be held in, say, 2026, 2027
Period. So if you're placing a bet on who's going to have the most seats, you're deploying different calculus from simply answering the question, who do you want to win the next election?
They're looking at different dates for the election, and what the bookies are probably factoring in is the Labour will get gubbed in
Well, it's not the bookies, mate. So, sorry to interrupt you. It's not the bookies factoring anything in. It's the people placing bets that are factoring, because all the bookies do is reflect where the money is going.
Yeah, well, but as I said, the people who are placing the bets are probably looking at what will happen in the election itself.
So what's their thinking then? Where on earth are they getting the idea that things are going rather better than whoever writes the national story is currently telling us?
I think they're looking at what will happen with the local elections in May in England. Will return even more reform-led councils, and on the basis that the ones that have already been set up are doing so well so far, even more people will experience how dreadful they are and think, ooh, letting them run the country would be even worse.
So the sort of clever money, as it were, is playing a very long game here and recognising the fact that Badenoch is still ridiculous and Farage is still the bloke who's thanking paedophiles' friends for help in subverting British democracy.
Yeah, as I said, basically these people who are putting that bet on are working on the basis that the election will be, you know, 2 or 3 years away, whereas if they were actually putting money on a bet for an election being held tomorrow or next week, they probably would go for reform.
I don't know. I mean, it's positing the fact that the big money movers are thinking about things a little bit more deeply than the average respondent to an opinion poll, which probably holds true, and yet what it is they're looking at, apart from, because nobody yet is essentially talking about Labour triumphs or Labour victories, although it's 20 to 11, there's still plenty of time to tell me why. I think James, the first caller, maybe came closer, but even he was saying it's the best of a bad lot or the least bad option. Nobody's really pointing at that long list of Labour achievements that Nick sends me. He hasn't sent it to me today whenever I turn my critical eye upon the government's current performance, but there are things that the government is doing and there are things that perhaps are reaching people that are not being reported by whoever it is that tells our national story. It is 10:42 and Alec is in Manchester. Alec, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
First off, I'll inflate one bubble and deflate another.
That'll do. Go on then.
good news on on Rachel Reeves. She's managed to save us a couple of billion. So On debt interest, and then
that's true. Yes, I mean most people probably won't know that, and if they're relying on the Daily Mail or any of their broadcast equivalents, then they never will. But yeah, you make a point.
Yeah, I just want to put some good news out there. So, okay, I don't think it's the government. I think it's the opposition. The right are doing well, but there's split between now three parties with Rupert Lowe starting his, and the left-wing opposition and centre opposition aren't doing particularly well.
Are people going to look at Farage and decide he's not quite racist enough?
Unfortunately, yeah.
But in numbers, in significant numbers?
Well, I think Elon Musk and social media is having a big part to play in that. I just think, I know a few people that absolutely hate Keir Starmer, and I'm not his biggest fan, but I know why, and they don't know why.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard not to sound a little bit condescending, but I mean, what else can you do with people who watched Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and austerity and decided that we need to have a fifth bite of that rancid cherry? And you're right, they're being told to hate Keir Starmer and they don't know why. At least with Sadiq Khan, they know that they're supposed to hate him because he's brown or because he's a Muslim. But what is Keir Starmer supposed to have done that justifies these levels of online vitriol?
Yeah, I mean, they're people I personally, I'm not saying everyone's like that. I'm not trying to, if someone's listening and they're feeling condescending, I'm not condescending you. I'm really not trying to, at least. But yeah, I think the right is doing better, but it's split across three votes. We've got first past the post. Ed Davey's not doing particularly well, other than PMQs.
I get a slightly plaintive air whenever I see, because the Greens are doing really well as well, which I would offer up as a challenge to your analysis, because it's, you know, the right-wing vote is being split, but so is the left-wing vote, arguably even more so than traditionally. Well, the numbers still support the idea that they're eating a lot of Labour's lunch.
But I don't necessarily think they're doing well enough, whereas the right are just completely eating each other's lunch.
The numbers that we're crunching this morning actually don't offer up that answer to the question. But I take your point, and it is early days. You'll have to forgive me. Rupert Lowe's the one that got elected in Farage's outfit.
I don't know too much about him, to be honest. He seems...
Great Yarmouth. Is he great? He's Great Yarmouth, I think.
Yeah.
And who does he want to deport?
Less racist than... Bloody Nigel, to be honest. But
who does he want to deport? Because that seems to me to be where the argument on that side of politics is going, is that they're going to argue about who's going to get deported. And whoever promises to deport the most people will win that mystical portion of the vote that no one's quite sure about the size of. Are we going to deport Rishi Sunak? Or are we just... I mean, or is it just poor brown people that will be... Isn't everyone... who's he going to deport?
I don't think he's quite as bad as the rest of them in that front, but I don't know whether this is propaganda. I think he wants to... So he said the other day about relaxing rules for spousal visas, and I don't know if this is just like a bait to pull in...
Well, I don't know what else they would argue about, except who is going to be cruelest or vilest. And that is territory, as you remind us, that Nigel Farage has occupied almost unchallenged since Nick Griffin dropped off the political landscape. Farage has had a clear swipe, a clear field when it comes to popularising xenophobia and jingoism and racism, and, of course, inviting the best friends of convicted paedophiles, foreign best friends of convicted paedophiles to interfere enthusiastically in British politics, for which Mr. Farage has, of course, thanked Steve Bannon, both publicly and lavishly, something else that he won't be asked about by Laura Koonsberg the next time he pops up on the BBC that he is, of course, still boycotting, something else that he wasn't asked about by Nick Robinson on a podcast where he lied egregiously about immigration and went entirely unchallenged. Which leads us back, doesn't it, to the question of who writes the national story. So why is this week, why are these numbers, temporary though they are, by definition, so rosy for a government that is under siege from both within and without? Does anybody want to try to paint a positive picture of Keir Starmer or the government, as opposed to the quite rightly and increasingly negative picture of the alternative, which, according to all of the polling, is still Nigel Farage, which puts Cammy Badenoch and Ed Davey in strange situations, doesn't it? I mean, why do they look increasingly irrelevant? Unfair, particularly, I'd argue, for Ed Davey, who, as Alec reminds us, generally makes a pretty good fist of PMQs, but is, and again, don't shoot the messenger, I am told by people what know, that there are whisperings about dissatisfaction with his leadership from within the ranks of the Parliamentary Liberal Democrat Party. I don't know how many of us got addicted to chaos. I used to somewhat patronisingly suggest that everybody else had got addicted to chaos. What would it be, 7 prime ministers in 10 years if they replaced Starmer? It's insane, absolutely insane. But I guess we're all a little bit addicted to chaos. And the thing about addiction is that the addict often doesn't realise they're addicted. We're all a little bit addicted to chaos. Why would anybody be talking about replacing Ed Davey, never mind Keir Starmer? Answer, because we bought into this idea from 2016 onwards that if you just change something at the top, then everything changes. And we keep learning that it doesn't. We keep learning that it doesn't. And yet we haven't quite weaned ourselves off that addiction. It's 10:48, phone lines are open.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I would like to see a ban on social media for under 16s. Start there, and then if the technology develops and gets better, if the companies actually respond to it, then maybe you can allow some more teenagers to go on it. Where I think we'll end up with this is I think Keir Starmer will go hell for leather on it because his MPs are supportive of it, and it will end up turning into legislation that had the backing of the House of Commons, but not a Scooby-Doo of how to actually do it.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Play app or the LBC app.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. Helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, Anne. With free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for chaps and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve...
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully. Support,
press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Everything dinner at Ocado. Save on sausages, tinned tomatoes and get a great price on garlic. Then splurge on the fancy pasta. The kind you know you're pronouncing wrong, which means it must be good. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 24th of Feb. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10:51 is the time. I had a bit of a wobble then. I need to correct something. I made a very small mistake. Boris Johnson described reports that he had been colluding with Steve Bannon and Nigel Farage to overthrow Theresa May back in 2018. That's what he described as codswallop. He hasn't responded to requests or questions about his appearance in the Epstein files and claims therein by Steve Bannon, best mates with the paedophile, big fan and supporter of Nigel Farage, that he had been involved with both of them, with Johnson and Farage, when plotting to overthrow Theresa May. He described it as the biggest loads of codswallop I have ever seen back in June 2019 or thereabouts. He hasn't responded to the contents of the Epstein files and his appearance in the Epstein messages. And I just thought that it would be quite important to clear that up. So Steve Bannon could, of course, be lying about Boris Johnson's proximity to him, although Johnson invited Bannon's company into the Foreign Office when he was there in 2018. Around that time, he was texting Epstein to say that he was, quote, in London with Boris. And 3 days earlier, in July the 13th of 2018, he wrote, "We are overthrowing May right now." The bit where I had a wobble, I mentioned this to you yesterday, and you know when you know something's true, but you still don't believe it because you don't really want to? Jeffrey Epstein texted Steve Bannon after Steve Bannon sat in this studio spewing his vicious right-wing poison in the company of his collaborator and close friend Nigel Farage. Jeffrey Epstein texted Steve Bannon to say, "Well done on LBC," which means he was listening to this radio station in his filthy lair. Oof. And, of course, swapping messages with the bloke that Nigel Farage thanked publicly for helping get Brexit over the line. Who writes the national story, eh? And why is Labour doing rather better than the national story would appear to allow? Ned's in Cambridge. Ned, what would you like to say?
Mr. OB, nice to speak again. Okay, so go down the pier. I remember those coin-pushing machines.
Yeah, they're not just on the pier. You get them all over the shop.
You know the ones, I mean. This is what I think this political landscape looks like at the minute. You've just got this slow, sliding shelf with a bunch of 10p's over there and a bunch of 50p's over there with Reform. So I think there's two things here. I think Reform have been a bit noisy this week, and I've just picked up that Braverman was banging on about the working class have had it too good.
Really? Oh, Lord. Yeah. I thought I paid I can't bear this. I saw a full-page advert in the Daily Telegraph today. It said the headline was Planet Normal, and it had Suella Braverman, Alison Phillips, Lionel Shriver, and Liam Halligan. So these four people are collaborating on something. I don't know whether it's a cake sale or a magazine or a podcast. Planet Normal and four. I mean, objectively speaking, I don't like to use pejoratives that have too many meanings. But if I had to assemble a collection of people that were the opposite of normal, those four would be fairly near the top of the list. So I can't keep up with all of it. I didn't know Braverman had claimed that the working class had had it too easy. I will take your word for it.
No, it's actually a video. Do you know what I mean? She's up on stage, you know what I mean? And she said, she said it clear into mind. You can go and watch it.
Okay, I probably won't.
Matt Barbette did a cracking interview with Farage the other week about Ratcliffe and took his pants down properly.
Right.
So I think people have clocked on to that. I think maybe the people that have got the councils like me down the road when I'm in Bradfield, Clacton are all fed up with him because, of course, we know the reason that he's not there. But I'll tell you what I'll do. Talking of betting, I'll put 50p on with you.
You can't. Not allowed. It's against Ofcom rules.
Okay. I'll theoretical 50p.
Yes.
That Farage will bottle it when it comes to the election. I think he's making far too much cash. People are seeing that he's far too busy with his wheezes and his schemes. And I think, Jenrick, there'll be warfare. And I reckon he'll do what he's always done, is bottle it at the last minute, because he's done it before.
And then everything will blow up.
Yeah, and it'll be off he'll go to the sunset.
You're not here to praise Starmer, but to bury him.
I think it's going back.
It's not. These movements are very little to do with Keir Starmer and everything to do with everybody else.
I think that's kind of. I think people are starting to cop on the fact that their policies are pretty bad news. You know?
I mean, that is the consensus view this hour, and I mean, it doesn't necessarily encompass all of the factors. And what it doesn't do, which I actually it shows what I know. I thought that this would be something of an olive branch to all the people who were so cross with me a couple of weeks ago for accurately reporting the level of trouble that Keir Starmer was in, but who nonetheless concluded that I was part of some hideous anti-Starmer conspiracy and was deliberately misrepresenting facts on the radio in order to hasten his departure from Downing Street. I thought they would be forming an orderly queue this morning to tell me about all the good stuff that has been going on. Ned's reference there to Mr. Farage making cash, a reference probably to, I think he earns more than any other parliamentarian now in extracurricular activities, all of which involves supporting local businesses in Clacton. That last bit was a blatant and obvious lie. Alan's in Portrush in Northern Ireland. Alan, what would you like to say?
Hey, James, how's it going?
I'm pretty good, actually, although I mean, still as confused as I was an hour ago, really. What are you going to add to the mix?
I don't think that Labour's doing anything particularly better at the minute. I think it's a wee bit of a disaster for them at the minute, to be honest. I think the Tories are gone for the meantime. You know, maybe someday they'll be back. I think at the minute, where I'm coming from is I play golf with guys and I work in a corporate environment and I talk to people about this, and these are smart people.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of them are like, you know, we've tried the others, we just have to try something different. But whenever you actually start talking to them and talking about what reform are promising, so for instance, their big thing is immigration. That's all that is what the top of their agenda is, no matter what anybody else says. You can look at the magic money tree stuff they're promising further down the line, and it is magic money tree stuff. But I think a lot of smart people, intelligent people, who are in this country, in Northern Ireland and in the UK, are actually starting to see through the lies a little bit with reform. I don't think Labour's doing anything special. I think people are just realising.
So if the gloss gets knocked off that sort of racist pantechnicon, then you're left with the same choice, really, that you had in 2019. I beg your pardon. The same choice that you had in 2020. You either have another go at another bite of the rancid cherry, or whatever you prefer, the four donkeys of the Krapopolips. We've tried it with Brexit. We've tried it with trust. We've tried it with austerity. We've tried it with Johnson. Let's try all the same things again with Farage, or we give Starmer or the Labour Party, whoever is leading it, give them another go, because no one can accuse them of having presided over 14 years of absolutely irrefutable catastrophe.
Well put.
Thank you.
I would also say, but I think there's also the loose associations between Farage, reform, and Trump can't be helping them now as well, because let's face it, Trump's becoming more unpopular by the week all over the world.
Yeah, that might be true as well, in that stench becomes a little bit more contagious. I mean, certainly Liz Truss this week photographed standing with a very confused-looking Donald Trump somewhere. I don't know where. It didn't look like the Oval Office or anywhere like that. Zoe Williams, somewhat ungallantly, if that's a word you can apply to a woman, suggested in The Guardian today that it looked as if Liz Truss hadn't brushed her hair. So the mystery of exactly where it was that she encountered Donald Trump persists. But she managed to post a picture of them together with the hashtag #RightAboutEverything, which is a position that Alan probably has a slightly higher view of the intelligence of his fellow citizens than I do on some mornings, particularly mornings after things like referendums. But if you're still clinging to the idea that Donald Trump is right about everything, or indeed the bravest man in the world, then you might actually be facing something of your own little Armageddon.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the government has rejected calls for the local government secretary, Steve Reid, to stand down over the U-turn on local elections. Mr. Reid had approved the delay until 2027, arguing that some councils were worried about the cost due to upcoming reforms. 30 votes in England will now go ahead after ministers received new legal advice yesterday. The Labour MP, Carl Turner, said the government is damaging itself with the constant chopping and changing.
They don't listen until it's too late. They need to open their ears. People are despising of the stuff that's been happening recently. And they needn't be, because we're doing some good stuff. But we can't talk about the good stuff because all of this shenanigans keeps coming up.
The leading American civil rights campaigner, Reverend Jesse Jackson, has died at the age of 84. He rose to prominence alongside Martin Luther King Jr. and ran for the Democratic presidential nomination, twice in the 1980s. Unemployment has risen to its highest level in nearly 5 years. It increased slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. The Office for National Statistics says the data reflects weak hiring activity, but also that more people are out of work and now looking for jobs. The head of the Metropolitan Police says courts need to stop releasing repeat offender mobile phone thieves. Sir Mark Rowley's also calling on manufacturers and telecom companies to make it harder for criminals to resell stolen devices. Sir Mark's comments come as the force reports a 12% drop in mobile phone thefts in London. Sergeant Ryan Perry has told LBC the Met is employing new tactics to catch offenders.
Policing has advanced, so much over the last sort of 12 months, 12 to 18 months. We're using these bikes, which are relatively new to the road. We've obviously got the drone up, and the combination of all that technology together really provides some exciting opportunities to actually deal the individual's intent on committing that criminality.
And a four-day cold weather warning has been issued for large parts of England. The alert from the UK Health Security Agency runs from Friday morning until Monday. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 52 at 10,522. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells through today. Some rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only. Subject to availability terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I watched a play the other day. It was in Ireland, actually. It was at the Gate Theatre in Dublin. It was a wonderful production of a play called Eureka Day. Hands up if you've heard of Eureka Day. And it is quite a well-established play. Helen Hunt starred in it at the London premiere in autumn of 2022. There was a production not long ago at the Nottingham Playhouse, which is just towards the end of last year, which is a wonderful space in the East Midlands. And I saw it in Dublin, as I say, at the Gate Theatre. And it's about a very trendy school in California. I think it's set in Berkeley, although I'm not sure that's ever completely established. And they have a very liberal vaccination policy. And the play only really follows the deliberations of the sort of governing body, the parents and the head teacher who make up the governing body. And there is an outbreak of mumps in the school, and it obviously prompts an extraordinary reflection on the liberal vaccination policy that they have in the school. It's a brilliant piece of theatre. And the production, I don't even know if it's still on, actually, but because I mean, it's not going to be a very long run, written by Jonathan Spector. Brilliant production. And it really got me thinking. I think it's on until the 7th of March, so you've got a chance. Hurry. Book once, book often. It really got me thinking about the outbreak in this country that was already being whispered about but hadn't yet broken through. And there are national issues here as well as local ones, but it is very much the situation in the North London suburb of Enfield that is focusing minds this morning. Because unvaccinated children, it has been suggested, would be required to self-isolate for 3 weeks. I mean, I cannot exaggerate or stress enough how on the money this play is when it comes to what is currently happening in Enfield. Except that in the play it's an outbreak of mumps, and in the suburb of Enfield, it is an outbreak of measles. There was a tragic statistic not long ago which involved the United Kingdom having its status removed as a sort of measles-safe country. Some children in the northeast of London are currently requiring hospital treatment, and the fear is that we are going to see a big increase as the schools shut down for half term. You need a vaccine rate, or at least you want a vaccination rate of over 95% in children aged 5 with 2 MMR jabs. That's what the World Health Organization recommends if you want to achieve herd immunity for the illness. And We haven't achieved that anywhere, I don't think, in England, or we're not achieving that anywhere in England at the moment. London boroughs, every single London borough has a vaccination rate currently below 80%. In fact, in Enfield, the figure is 64.3% of five-year-olds who've received both doses. That makes it one of the lowest in the country, and inevitably, perhaps, it is in Enfield that the outbreak is now reaching serious levels. 60 suspected cases, 7 schools and a nursery. And what happens in this play is that they examine the debate, but they do so from a perspective that recognises science trumping suspicion or superstition even. And they also, what's so beautiful about it is the way that it properly reflects. It's got Philippa Dunn in it from Motherland, if, like me, you're a massive fan of Sharon Horgan's comedy series. It actually provides sympathy for one of the main characters. I'm just conscious of spoilers, which is probably a little bit silly, because the number of people that are going to make their way to a theatre in Dublin to watch this play as a consequence of my recommendation and then get cross with me if I've given away too much of the plot in this introduction is probably quite small. But there's sympathy for the position of the leading vaccine skeptic, if you like, in the cast. And I just found it really fascinating that it was. And then, of course, there's a big joke because of when it ends. It's set before the pandemic. It's set before COVID kicks in. So, again, conscious of spoilers, the idea that you've had a successful debate and you've arrived at a resolution and everybody is happy with what has been done and we never need to worry about all this stuff again with COVID and, of course, the anti-vaccine jamboree that COVID brought into many societies literally just around the corner. So, what's the phone in here, do you think? I don't have, and this may be a failing of mine, in which case I should apologise to you again. So many apologies. I'm turning into Keir Starmer. I should apologise to you again because I don't have the energy for an argument with an idiot. Okay, there are some circumstances in which vaccines can be troublesome. You know, if you have immune conditions, if you have particular medical conditions that are susceptible in ways that the rest of us are not to vaccines, there are conversations and there are avenues that exist. But if you're getting your information off self-promoting snake oil salesman on social media, then I don't have the energy. I'll tell you, seriously, the last time that happened to me, actually, Matt Lucas in the news today for being followed around on public transport by somebody shouting at him about Palestine, presumably because Matt is Jewish, although I've never heard him express a political opinion in my life. And that the last time it happened to me, last time someone stuck a phone in front of me, it was during COVID and it was all about vaccines. And you just sort of found yourself thinking, I can't win in these situations. There's nothing I can say. I'm certainly not going to engage in a debate with somebody who's got all of their information from Facebook. It was a double header, actually. I had one person on my right shouting at me about vaccines and a person on my left shouting at me about paedophiles, about the, you remember the conspiracy that had a pizza restaurant with a basement that was full of people. He was shouting at me about that. And they were almost competing with each other for my attention. I was only walking up the mall. And I remember saying to the paedophile bloke, did I tell you this at the time? I must have done. I said, if there really is a secret society of paedophiles, and I suppose in some ways the conspiracy theory that he'd subscribed to has changed a bit in the context of the Epstein revelations, although it wasn't that kind of cabal that he was concerned about. It was one populated entirely by Hollywood stars and left-wing politicians. And I said, if there really is one out there, as you keep telling me, shouldn't you be, I mean, why is following me around with a camera phone going to help? Shouldn't you be out there trying to rescue the children or something like that? And the poor fellow, you could see the brain ticking behind the eyes. He was sort of going, yes, I should be. I should be out there rescuing the children. Because, I mean, if they exist, then you could find them. And surely the information you're getting about what's happening to them would extend to letting you know where you could go. Anyway, I digress slightly. The The vaccine person shouting at me from the other side about being some sort of shill of Big Pharma and, deliberately lying to... So you can't win. And Matt Lucas is one of the loveliest people I've ever met, I have to tell you that. And the way he handled himself was dignified, and the idea that he is somehow responsible for genocide in Gaza or the plight of the Palestinian people is obviously offensive and ridiculous. It would probably help if Israeli politicians didn't keep claiming that they represent every Jewish person on the planet with their Old Testament references and things like that, because bears of very little brain like the bloke following Matt Lucas around could, I'd not say be excused for concluding that that conflation is justified, but they could certainly point to other people making the conflation and wonder why that is going on all the time. But I don't know whether or not you should ban kids who haven't been vaccinated from school. I actually don't know. I think you probably should, shouldn't you? I mean, if you understand the basic mathematics of herd immunity, then you punish the child for the ignorance of their parents. Do we do that in any other contexts? I read quite a troubling report about a homeschooling inspector the other day, and big changes to the kind of parents taking the decision to homeschool their child. I don't know if that sees society punish. And did you ever get punished for your parents' opinions? Why are you excluding me? Why can't I go to school, Mummy? Because I know better than the doctors. And in the play that I watched, Eureka Day, it prompts huge schism and division. Up to and including the point where one of the children of one of the governors actually contracts mumps, and it's touch and go for a while on whether or not he will live or not. So, how do you explain to a child why they can't go to school? Because all of the other pupils are taking, medicine, are taking their vaccines, and you are not. So, I guess that's the most obvious question. I mean, it's the right thing to do, isn't it? This, you have to do this. If the children aren't vaccinated, they are a danger to everybody, including vaccinated children. It's one of the great things people don't understand about herd immunity. It doesn't mean that everybody is immune. It means the herd is safer, because even if it pops up, then the vaccine will immunize people against catching it. So even people who have been vaccinated can still get it. But the more people have been vaccinated, the less likely that becomes. Obviously, the likelihood of people who haven't been vaccinated getting it is going to be immeasurably higher than the likelihood of people who have been vaccinated getting it, but that doesn't change the mathematics of herd immunity. So, I've got two questions for you. Why is it so low in some parts of the country? 0345 606 0973. I've got three questions. But whenever I said to you, I've got two questions for you, and I've ended up only asking two questions. Do you know the one that really interests me? The one that really interests me is what do you do if you've got one of these people in your life? How do you actually deal with it? Have you already faced the problem and the question that the schools are now facing? How do you do it? What do you do if someone's coming around for a play day and you find out that they're not vaccinated? They haven't done their MMRs, or I suppose if we were to go back a few years, they've been kept away from the COVID vaccination. How do you actually police it in your own life? How do you make these decisions? The second question then is why? Why is this happening on the scale that it is happening now? Enfield's figures are pitifully low. And plenty of other places as well. And on a national level, we're losing our status nationally. And then the simple question about keeping people out of school. London has some of the lowest vaccination rates in the country, but other cities, Birmingham, Coventry, Nottingham, Liverpool, Manchester, also have poor vaccination rates for five-year-olds. How much of it can we lay at the feet of the NHS? Whether or not the availability of the jab or the availability of the information telling you that you need to get the jab. Only 11 locations in England have got above 95%. Barnsley, Derbyshire, West Berkshire and Cumberland. And of course, it's a hideous condition to get. So a variety of questions for you. The first is, why? The person you know that hasn't done it, why haven't they done it? Well, how do you argue with somebody like this? 03456060973. It can split families. It's why this play is so powerful. It can split families. It can split friendships. It can split parents, even. Not just parents of different children, but parents of the same child. One can be pro and one can be anti. How does this happen? Why are people doing it on a scale that we haven't seen since the Daily Mail was full-throatedly supporting the nonsense being propagated by Andrew Wakefield? 03456060973. And, I mean, you have to exclude these children from school, don't you? Even though that will make elements of the situation worse. You have to exclude children from school. If you're not, if a child hasn't been vaccinated, then they can't come to school because of the risk that they pose to every other child in the class, including the ones that have been vaccinated. Is that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it makes me sound a bit pathetic, probably, that I'm worried about punishing the child for the idiotic views or the ill-informed views of the parents. So there it is, 18 minutes after 11. Question number one, why is this happening? Question number two, how do you address it in your own life? And question number three, what do we feel about excluding children from school for 3 weeks if they haven't been vaccinated? Because that is the only way in which we can sort of navigate the incoming spike in infection rates. Hit the numbers now. You will get through. Slightly different phone-in for us. We haven't done one like this for quite a while. But I'm interested in the social question as well. Of what has happened to the parents who have decided that they know better than the doctors? Doctors are not infallible. They're not always 100% right. A lot of people will probably be shouting thalidomide at me via the radio, but that doesn't, I'm afraid, have a role to play in the conversation that we're currently having. We're excluding children from school for 3 weeks, potentially. I don't see any other alternative because you cannot break through the brains of the kind of parents that have taken their children down this path that endangers not only them, but of course endangers every other child in their circle as well, including the ones that have had the jabs. All right? 03456060973. Why, what, and how?
This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as maths, English and science, I study creative subjects such as media, drama, art and design, business and music technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's coming out, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Idle money chills in your current account, parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 21 minutes after 11. Please don't say my name. My husband is an anti-vaxxer, but I am not because I'm not an idiot. I won't tolerate a word he's got to say when it comes to vaccinating our kids. They're too young to have had both doses yet, and I'm really scared because we are actually moving to Enfield soon. And I have to go, I'm going to delete that now so that I don't run any risk whatsoever of saying your name later. And it occurred to me that my introduction was a bit unkind. Not necessarily in the way that you think, but because it's a bit voyeuristic. Give me a ring and tell me about the family breakdown or the schisms in your life. Whereas what we really want to know is, how do you reach someone? I nearly did it then. If I hadn't deleted that message, I'd have said their name then. I'd have said, how do you reach someone like Reep's husband? So I'm just going to write that name from my memory so I don't even accidentally say it. In fact, I'm going to call you Barbara. So let's pretend that text was from someone called Barbara. Barbara? Why? How do you reach someone like Barbara's husband? Okay, so that is a perhaps a healthier way of conducting this conversation than calling everybody idiots. Although Barbara did, of course, call her own husband an idiot. How do you reach someone like Barbara's husband on this matter? Because if we don't start reaching them more, we're going to have more and more stories like the one breaking this week about an outbreak forcing potentially unvaccinated children into a 3-week lockdown. Margie is on the Wirral. Margie, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome.
In answer to your first question, should we be stopping unvaccinated children from going to school?
Yes.
I would say categorically yes, because they are putting everyone around them at risk. If a child attends school with some illness, disease, whatever it may be, they are then risking giving it to other children who then take it home. My daughter-in-law has got lupus. She is highly immunocompromised. If my grandson comes home from school with something which she then contracts, her life is at risk. And I don't think that's right.
So,
I
probably overuse the word idiot a bit. And on this topic, that some people texting me to say, well, just keep the children with measles. I mean, this is an idiot thing to say. Sorry, I couldn't keep that up. So keep the children who've got measles away from school. That's how we protect your granddaughter. That's how we protect children.
Yes. And I can also say from first-hand experience that I know what the effects of having these diseases can cause. I had a brother who developed polio during the outbreak in the 50s. He was 2 years old.
Oh,
he spent 3 months in an iron lung. Every muscle in his legs was wasted away. He spent the rest of his life wearing calipers until near the end, where he was in a wheelchair.
And this is pure herd immunity territory. I mean, this is, you know, the mothership, really, of herd immunity and its importance. It pops up, actually, in the play that I'm talking about, because there's a brilliant device on the stage where the social media conversation, while they're live streaming the chat from the governor's meeting, plays out on screen. So you're not even listening to the actors. You're just laughing at what's going up on the screen. And one of them says, hey, does everyone remember that time I got polio? No, of course you freaking don't, because I got vaccinated. And it gets a big laugh from the audience, but it's actually a very serious point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I also had another brother who developed measles and chickenpox both together at the same time.
Oh, yikes.
As a result, the chickenpox got inside one of his eye sockets, and he lost an eye as a result. So he had to live with the result of that for the rest of his life.
So, someone listening to this, Barbara's husband, just either doesn't believe you or doesn't understand the relationships that you are describing. How do we reach him? How do we reach him? Because I always like to work on the principle that people are reachable, despite all the evidence to the contrary over the last 10 years. But how do we reach him?
Well, measles, for instance, or mumps, let's go with mumps. Mumps actually causes infertility in men. How would you like to catch mumps?
But I'm going to take my chances, you see. That's what they have to be concluding. They've been told all of this stuff, and they think, I'm going to take my chances because I'm so frightened of what the vaccine can do. That's your actual anti-vaxxers. And then you've got, presumably, a significant number of people who just can't be bothered, don't realise how important it is.
The reason for this is because people of a generation, I would say, younger than myself, so I would say possibly 30 and under, they've never had to live through what we lived through, being 50 and above, where children we would go to other people's houses deliberately to have a measles party or a chicken pox party so that we would develop these things.
Natural
immunity. They've never had to deal with things like that. They've never had to deal with a child who's dying for mumps. I've had mumps. I've had everything because we didn't have MMR, etc. I've had mumps. I've had measles. I've had chicken pox. I've had German measles.
Okay, and Barbara's husband is saying, and you're fine. So why should I vaccinate my child? You've had it all and you're fine.
But my brother wasn't. Why did my brother have to spend the rest of his life unable to walk? Why did my other brother have to lose an eye? There are people now alive who've never had to go through any of that because of vaccinations.
I mean, to me, these are arguments that close down all of the debate. They're completely solid and irrefutable, but they're obviously not, because a lot of the people who have made the decision not to vaccinate their children are not persuaded by any of the things that you've told me. And, you know, that dreadful phrase, I've done my own research, will give them, they think, the tools they need to distance themselves, detach themselves from your family's experience and your own experience, and somehow reside in blissful ignorance or blissful complacency, a place where none of this could possibly happen to them. I don't get it. I mean, that's the bit I don't get, because everything Margie says is quite well known and quite well established, and there's going to be a generational element to it as well. There might be a cultural element to it too. I mean, you know, some of the myths that grew up around COVID vaccines were extraordinary, but they get halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers on. But these kind of numbers are, potentially terrifying. So some of the things that maybe Barbara's husband doesn't understand. It's invisible until it isn't. So you can be infectious long before it's known that you've got it. So the idea of only excluding the children who've got measles from school instead of the children who haven't been vaccinated is, I'm afraid, silly. I'm going to go a little bit further. It's stupid. It's ignorant. Okay? You can still get it when you have been vaccinated. The chances, same with all vaccines, almost all vaccines, the chances are just much, much lower. Extraordinary how widespread ignorance of that fact was during COVID. Well, why should I get a vaccine? Because I know someone who got it and they caught it. No, that's not the point. Some people, when they catch it, will be in terrible, terrible trouble. And some people won't be. The whole social movement, the herd immunity, is designed to minimize the number of people that end up in terrible, terrible trouble. And if you achieve herd immunity, that number can be zero. Literally. The children who haven't had the vaccine, if they go to school and catch it, which of course becomes more likely according to the size of the outbreak, then they are in a much worse situation, potentially, than the children who have had the vaccine. So there are no arguments here that make sense, except the one about autism, which was put to bed scientifically years and years and years ago. So that is why I don't understand why the numbers are so low. Which is one of the questions that I'd like you to turn your attention to next. Do we know why the numbers are so low? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. It's 11:30. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The government has rejected calls for the local government secretary Steve Reid to stand down over the U-turn on local elections. Plans to delay votes in 30 council areas in England have been abandoned after ministers received new legal advice yesterday. The American civil rights activist Reverend Jesse Jackson has died at the age of 84. In a statement, his family said his unwavering belief in justice, equality and love uplifted millions. And Reform UK's Nigel Farage is announcing members of his senior team. So far, Robert Jenrick has been named as the party's shadow chancellor, while Zia Youssef has been named as shadow home secretary. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, some rain in the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 9 years running.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Discover the world of Dobble, back in McDonald's Happy Meal. Race through the worlds of music, sports, space and more. How quickly can your little one spot the match? Dobble's bursting with fun. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 5th of March 2026, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy. Dobble range comprises toys only, while stocks last.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
When ordinary people take on extraordinary challenges. When it's the finale after weeks of competition. When it's time to go big or go home.
So, who do you want to win?
Him.
Him?
Good hair.
Classic reason, yeah?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels with all the reality shows you love to talk about. Search TV licence together.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:34. They're having another rally over at Reform headquarters. They've just put Suella Braverman in charge of education. I mean, I don't know. We're talking about being vaccinated against measles, mumps and rubella, but my goodness me, I wish you could be vaccinated against stupid. Who are we going to put in charge of education? Suella Braverman. Don't be ridiculous. No, seriously. Suella Braverman will head up Reform's education policy, which is great. I mean, I'll leave you to speculate on who's going to be in charge of health. 11:34 is the time. Speaking of health, of course, we are discussing vaccines. Speaking of Reform, of course, they invited someone onto the stage at their conference to claim that the king had got cancer as a consequence of a COVID jab. And one of them claimed that he'd actually helped write their health policy. And then another one of them claimed that he hadn't done that at all. And then another one claimed that he had. And then, I don't know, everybody was too busy being frightened of migrants to remember that this was absolutely bloody terrifying. But then they put Suella Braverman in charge of education, and irony quietly died. I don't know why. I mean, is it back? Are we back to the Andrew Wakefield autism wrongness? Has that had a resurrection? Is it the legacy of COVID that people are now more vaccine sceptical when you'd have thought that in a sensible country the opposite would have happened? Or is it a bit like, I mean, if you can persuade people that London is desperately unsafe and they never come here, then is it the same answer? I said to this to you at 10 o'clock this morning. I say to you, why is measles back? Is it the same answer as the question we asked last week about why is racism back? Why is racism fashionable again? Answer, social media, people keen to believe lies, very, very bad actors making money out of spreading nonsense. Why is measles back? Social media, people surprisingly keen to believe lies, some very, very bad actors making money out of spreading nonsense. Don't immediately have a lot of in common, do they, measles and racism, although they're both quite infectious, it would appear. You can only get immunised against one of them. So why are parents now less likely to vaccinate their children than they were 10 years ago? I don't know. Wendy's in Norwich. Wendy, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James.
Hello.
I'm a recently retired GP of 30 years, working in a deprived area in Great Yarmouth, as we mentioned, Great Yarmouth this morning.
Oh, blimey. Yes.
And also a new grandmother, and my granddaughter is going to be starting nursery at age 10 months before her MMR in October. Thank you. But it is a worry. She's going to be starting in London at age 10 months, and there are stories of people not taking them to nursery until they've had their MMR, the worry of that.
Oh, wow, okay.
Until 6 months, the baby is protected by the mother's immunity.
Right.
But between 6 months and a year, that is another really worrying group that could get measles because they won't have had their MMR. They could catch it. So that is a real worrying group. The younger babies are obviously even more at risk. So, yeah.
Well, in fact, in Enfield, it's 7 schools and 1 nursery, which probably fits into what you described, doesn't it?
Yes. Indeed.
Do we know why this is happening?
Well, it's a perfect storm. There's several things. I mean, general practice is the place where vaccinations take place, and that's been eroded financially and obviously over the years. They've got the expertise there. They've got fantastic practice nurses. Vaccinating babies is a skilled job.
Of course,
they're starting to talk about other people all trying to do it and so on. We've got the expertise already, so help them do it. We've got the data in general practice, got whole family records. And we used to find there were two groups. There was a group that just didn't get round to it, whole families. And the whole families, I think it's so we used to tag the whole family's records. So if they came in with the other baby, just happened to be there, we'd say to the practice nurse, can you get them now, if you see what I mean? Which sounds a bit drastic, but it was sometimes the only way to do it. People used to call around and visit people as well to do it, but it wasn't it was just something that had to be done. There was a lot of trust as well, so continuity of care, people trusted their GP and what they said. This is all being eroded in a massive way, so that's one of the things.
This is politics that you're describing, and this is not ignorance or idiocy on the part of parents. This is the system or the safety net sprouting holes.
Exactly. Yes.
Gosh. Thank you for calling today, because that's not something I could have worked out on my own.
Right. The second group is the ones that glaze over when you say about why have you not had any of your children vaccinated?
Yeah.
And there's the glazing over, and there's literally no way you can get through. So specialist counsellors are people that they need. And then we need the carrot and the stick. We need the stick, really. We can't have people just arriving in institutions like schools and nurseries and being put at risk. It's actually...
So just take me back to the glazed over ones. Are they the sceptics? Are they the people that have done their own research?
Yes.
So they don't argue with you?
No, they just sit there and say no. However much you try and tease it out of them and say, where are you getting your sources from? They're literally...
Oh, how frustrating.
But they almost need some specialist, somebody with a lot of time, and saying they've got to come in and have... It's got to be a bit of a stick, to be honest, to come and talk to somebody.
So you've got... I mean, the family I have most sympathy for, because if I hadn't married so out of my league, I could have perhaps been the kind of person that just never got round to it. For myself, I hope not for my children. I don't think so for my children. But, you're constantly thinking, I must do that and I must do this. And some of us are just built a bit badly. So that is easy to understand. And then... probably easy to undo, much easier to undo, as you say. I mean, it'd be ideal if it didn't take intervention, but it does. What we've done is turn down the ability for the system to intervene. As you say, we've turned down the relationship between the patient and the GP, which makes these kind of what you would call benign interventions much harder to orchestrate. And then you've got the glazed overs who need something more than a benign intervention. They need what I might describe as a rather more robust intervention. But do we know what would actually work? Because kind of you want to bang their heads together, I presume, but that unfortunately is not fortunately is not an option.
I mean, I think it's a long term thing. Things like Sure Start centres being closed, those sorts of things, a gradual build up of trust rather than people isolating in their houses and just online.
There's so much going on, isn't there? Here, so I mean, even the online. Lure the worlds where we don't meet, talking about social media yesterday and the price that children pay for not having any experiences in the real world. They grow up to become parents who are less likely probably to vaccinate their children, and not for the obvious reasons that journalists sometimes obsess about, like the Andrew Wakefield legacy or the COVID problems. You're glazed over, parents notwithstanding. There's an awful lot of parents who are one can feel a lot more sympathy for, perhaps.
Yes, they've got stressful lives.
They have, and calling them idiots is not helpful, really.
No.
So I'll stop doing that.
But there is a growing number of the glazing over people. So I think there does need to be a bit of a stick involved with it, because it's not.
And then that would be an exclude. Well, yeah, but what stick's going to work, Wendy? Because I'm going to exclude those children from school. That could actually ossify.
Well, the USA did that, didn't they, until fairly recently. There were some states in the USA where you were not allowed to go to school and Lisa were vaccinated.
And then along came Trump.
Yes.
And what's his chops? Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy Jr.
And just, yes, and of course Andrew Wakefield, I believe, I'm not sure, but is out there helping along with that idea still.
Yeah.
I think so. I'm not sure.
And how much harder does it make the life of an average GP? I mean, not that much difference to you, except when the outbreaks happen and you have to deal with the consequences.
Yes. Well, general practice is a business as well as everything else. Yeah. And basically, if you don't get your targets, you get penalised. So there is a big old incentive for GPs to do as much as possible. But they're all losing. They're all losing that.
And final question. I mean, you keep talking about sticks as opposed to carrots. Excluding children from school is one thing, but you know, in a really well-funded society, this would be a safeguarding issue, wouldn't it? It'd be a social services territory, or not?
Yeah, you could argue so. I mean, we don't really want to wait for it to get more spread for those poor children, but, you know, it gets to a point where it would have to become a safeguarding issue, yeah.
Oh, boy, thank you. I came back from the break at 20 past 11 and thought I might have set this up a little bit wrong, because there's no earthly way that all of these parents are, chomping fools who are all buying into whatever it is they've swallowed from their Uncle Keith's Facebook page. And Wendy, a recently retired GP, and even more recently a grandmother, making it absolutely clear that a lot of these people are reachable. How many of our topics boil down to the question of how many people are actually reachable? How many people falling for the racist claptrap of far-right politicians are actually reachable, can be brought back in to the fold of decency and kindness if they are simply given the evidence that they need? And I bet there are many, many more parents in the categories Wendy described than there are in the glazed-over, unreachable categories. But how you reach all of them is a crucial question. I think the parents are negligent, but they will come back with arguments about freedom and the government and this, that and the other, to which you could respond by simply saying, well, the government also provides pretty much every public space that you're allowed to access and every school that your child can go to. So that's fine. You don't like what the government wants you to do with regard to vaccination, then you don't get to enjoy the benefits of being a fully functioning member of society. And then you alienate and exclude these children even more. Thank you, Wendy. Chloe's in Liverpool. Chloe, what would you like to say?
Hi. So I used to work at the School of Tropical Medicine in Liverpool several years ago.
Fantastic.
And two projects I worked on were focused on kind of health inequities, more specifically vaccine hesitancy.
Yes.
So the first call was from Liverpool City Council. So this project was looking specifically in the Liverpool City area. And then the second was looking at other health inequities, but included MMR.
Okay.
And I think the key point was you've got these kind of different theories, but you've got confidence is a major issue. And I think your previous caller hit the nail on the head, which is this idea of people feel like they know more than the doctor because they don't know the doctor. And they don't see as the same person. They don't see the same nurse. But there's also things just like convenience. You know, where do you go to get it? Do you have to book an appointment with your GP? You've got to wait on hold.
I'm obsessed with parallels. And I think sometimes I might be the only one. But this actually reminds me of the conversation we had yesterday about Russia, would you believe, Chloe? I said, why aren't people more friends? So you had the German and the British chief defence figures yesterday telling us that we need to be a lot more worried about war with Russia. And the average punter, myself included, goes, yeah, whatever, what's on the telly? And so MMR or measles vaccinations in general suffer similarly. Telling people, it's why Margie from your neck of the woods was such a powerful caller at the beginning, talking about her brother getting polio and her other brother getting chickenpox. People are just sort of going, yeah, whatever, what's on the telly? They're not recognising the urgency or the necessity of getting the jab.
I completely agree. And I mean, I know people in my own life who are vaccine hesitant. When we talk about, for example, at Alder Hey, there's been recent cases of measles, you know, children being hospitalised. And the comment I got back was, yes, but I bet that child had existing health conditions.
Right.
And I thought to myself, firstly, even if they did, perhaps they couldn't be vaccinated and they would have been protected by the community. But secondly, you know, regardless of that, it doesn't matter. The fact is that they're in hospital.
Is vaccine hesitant a helpful phrase?
I feel it is, because I think that we need to separate out the people who are complete
glazed over,
absolute no-go, will not turn round, are incredibly stubborn.
Yeah.
And I think hesitant, that group of hesitant people are the ones that you can change their mind through targeted approach. So if it is convenient, pop up vaccination clinics. We have them at my workplace.
Do you?
you know, and this isn't at the Tropical Medicine School now, but where I work now within the government, we have pop-up vaccine clinics for the flu every year.
Where are the vaccine hesitant people getting their misinformation from?
It's very complex, isn't it? I think a lot of it is social media.
Yeah,
a lot of it is targeted. So, I mean, you know probably a little bit about this idea of like these, I know very little, algorithms target individuals based on what they look at. So the more
I'm susceptible to this nonsense, and therefore it will bombard me. Back to the topic, both topics yesterday, the social media topic, perhaps more obviously linked to this, and the Russia topic, which is linked to this as well. And then, of course, the combination of topics leads us to the question of why is this happening? And the answer is because people like being misled. That's the weirdest discovery of our age, in a way, is that people love... They love some sense of power they get from thinking they know things that the doctors and the people who've been to medical school for 10 years or the people that have worked at the School of Tropical Medicine, they don't get it. I get it because I've been on my Uncle Keith's Facebook page, and that's where the real facts are. I do my own research. If we had seen, Mike picks up on this point, and it ties together all my calls this hour, if we had grown up watching people die or get very, very ill with these conditions, we wouldn't think twice about vaccinating our children against them. So it becomes vaccines become a victim of their own success in a way. Maybe. 11:48 is the time. Did you cut Chloe off or did I just bore her into silence? I don't know. We'll never find out. That's it. I want to get Andy on in the next hour, in the next segment of the programme to talk about this extraordinary interview he's conducted with a former member of the close protection squad, looking into some of the I don't want to put words into his mouth, but some of the blind eyes that perhaps were turned to Andrew Windsor's conduct and activities when he was still a prince. It's not funny anymore, is it, that line, the artist formerly known as Prince? It's such an icky story. It's a grim, it's a hideous story. Important to remember because as I turn to the right, there's Nigel Farage sweating all over my television screen. That Steve Bannon, best mates with the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, was in cahoots with Nigel Farage long after Epstein had been jailed and reportedly plotting to get, well, I have to say reportedly, plotting together to subvert British democracy, whether by overthrowing or helping to overthrow a democratically elected prime minister, or, of course, by using far-right websites to persuade people to vote to become the first population in history to impose economic sanctions on itself. And you think there aren't parallels? How on earth do you persuade people not to vaccinate their children? Well, look, if you and Steve Bannon, Nigel Farage and Steve Bannon, can use the internet to persuade people to vote to become the first population in the history of humanity to impose, to voluntarily impose economic sanctions on itself, then of course you can use the same technologies to persuade people not to vaccinate their own children against hideous diseases. It's 10 to 12.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
14 U-turns now from this supposedly forensically skilled barrister turned prime minister, who clearly couldn't see the legality or make that illegality of cancelling democracy. And cancelled for one reason. They know they face a wipeout. And it's cost, by the way, £63 million. Yet another blithely stupid decision. Is there anything he can get right?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Okay, done. Move that. Oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to Skip Hire. He came. He soared. He conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name. Applies to your bank PLC.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life. Giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only. Subject to availability terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:52. The inability to understand the difference between cancelling and postponing goes further than even we thought at 10 o'clock this morning, it would appear. But on we go. Andy Hughes is here, our crime correspondent. I mean, perhaps inappropriately, Andy, because we are discussing some of the potentially hideous exploits. We should stress that Andrew Windsor continues to deny doing anything unlawful during his long relationship with the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. So the context is hideous and gross and getting worse every day. Mm. But one of the elements of the story that you're reporting on this morning is enduringly fascinating to me, because you've been talking to a former close protection officer about former colleagues, and the phrase I think of is going native almost, becoming too close to the royal family. Tell me more first about that.
Yeah, so how it works is every single royal family member will have their own close protection team. These are highly trained...
Harry, I'm already interrupting you.
Now, these are highly trained specialist officers from the Metropolitan Police. Now, this former officer, he felt compelled to contact me after the release of the Epstein files earlier this month. And he tells me that members of the Royal Protection Unit became too close to the royal family, including Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, and may have withheld crucial information about what they witnessed on Jeffrey Epstein's private island. Now, we know that the former prince visited this island on at least two occasions. On one of those occasions, in 2000, this is when the late Virginia Giuffre alleged that she was forced to have sex with Andrew. Andrew, of course, denies this. So, this officer told me some fascinating details about this team. He said, and it really speaks of the culture, he said that this team were very closed off. He said that they started behaving and acting like members of the royal family. The phrase he used to me was, they're more royal than the royals. They began wearing signet rings, and
That's such a giveaway.
Well, that was the detail that really stood out to me as well. So I contacted the Met, and I put these allegations to them. They have now confirmed that the firm is now actively assessing whether their officers assigned to Andrew willfully turned a blind eye to what was going on Epstein's island. I've also spoken to one of the victim's lawyers. His name is Spencer Cuven, and this is what he told me.
If the police were going to be doing their job correctly, they should be finding the protection officers that were assigned to Andrew and interviewing them. Much like here in the States, they have an obligation to tell the truth during an investigation. So instead of just asking people to step forward, why not go out and actually interview the people you know are there?
I think also one of the key things that this former officer told me was there was a real culture of fear within this unit, because there was more than one occasion where an officer would report a member of the royal family. For example, one member of the royal family was reported for speeding. This then went up to command, So this was reported. The next day, this officer was brought in, and he was then relieved from his duties in the unit. And not only that, he was put back in uniform. So
flipping out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is like a institutionalized cap doffing and forelock tugging, even for police officers doing their job and enforcing the law.
Well, yeah, and also these are police officers. It is their job to enforce the law, and they are seeing and they are witnessing people breaking the law, allegedly,
yes,
then reporting it, and then the next thing they know, they're kicked out of the unit.
Funny, isn't it? This idea that impunity is inherited. We should probably explain why signet rings made me snigger. I mean, this is something that a lot of posh people wear.
Yes.
And you're not supposed to just go down the shop and buy one.
No.
It's supposed to be handed to you on your 18th birthday, and it features the family's coat of arms. I went to school with lads who wore signet rings.
I was going
to say, embarrassed to admit, Andy. I went through a phase of thinking I might get myself one. It is one of those little social tells.
It is.
That toffs use to distinguish themselves from hoi polloi.
If you want to put it like that. If you look out for them, most male members of the royal family will wear one. And then, but it's very unusual.
And most members of the Met will not.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the point, right?
Yes, exactly. I've been asked this question by a few people. You know what it's like sometimes if you're knocking about with people who don't know any other journalists. They think that we're party to extraordinary secrets and insights and things like that. But there is quite a lot of confusion about how Andrew could have got up to the things that we know he got up to, never mind the things he's been accused of and continues, of course, to deny, while close protection officers were in attendance, while they were actually there. Kind of hard to shake them off, isn't it?
Yeah, so how it will work is, just say a principal, as they call them, they will be going to a location, for example, if it's Jeffrey Epstein's island. It is the job of the protection officers to make sure that this venue is safe in terms of, you know, are there any bombs? Is there any threats? Once it has been established that there are no threats, they will then scale back. However, what this officer is suggesting is that being on that island alone, they must have seen some unsavoury things.
Or even heard reports or people talking.
They're
supposed to be professional detectives. Anyway, it's a cracking story, and I don't think it will be the end of it. Little St. James Island, owned by Epstein in the US Virgin Islands, known to locals, as you mentioned in your report on the LBC website, as Paedophile Island. So, idea that nobody knew, even as they continued to fraternise with Jeffrey Epstein long after his original conviction, is obviously laughable. It's coming up to 12 noon. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know whether we're going to return to vaccines at a later date, because, of course, if the outbreaks continue, if the escalations continue, then we'll have to try harder to work out what can be done about it. But I'm particularly grateful to Wendy and other callers in the last hour for steering me away from the kind of somewhat lazy idea that it's all about the people marching up and down the mall, sticking phones in your face and populating Facebook with their lies and their vaccine scepticism. Sometimes the loudest voices are not the ones that you should be listening to most. And if that hour reminded me of anything, it's that sometimes the quietest voices belong to the people who would be most easily helped back into the light.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the government is resisting calls to sack the local government secretary, Steve Reid, over the U-turn on local elections. Mr. Reid had approved the delay until 2027, arguing that some councils were worried about the cost due to upcoming reforms. 30 votes in England will now go ahead after ministers received new legal advice yesterday. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock admitted to LBC this morning the change is not ideal.
Our focus is about getting the best possible value for money for the British taxpayer at all times. And, we want to act in their interest and ensure that you don't have unnecessary bureaucracy. I think most people in the country would support that. The legal advice changed because of the legal challenge that we received, and that we are where we are. We now have to move forward.
The American civil rights activist Reverend Jesse Jackson has died at the age of 84. In a statement, his family said his unwavering belief in justice, equality and love uplifted millions. He ran for the Democratic presidential nomination twice in the 1980s. And speaking in 1988, he urged US citizens to find common ground.
Don't you surrender! Suffering breeds character! Character breeds faith! In the end, faith will not the support. You must not surrender!
Nigel Farage has announced members of Reform UK's senior team. Suella Braverman has been named as the party's education and equality spokesperson, while Zia Youssef has been named as shadow Home Secretary. Speaking in Westminster, Reform's new shadow Chancellor, Robert Jenrick, said they will work hard to win voters' trust.
We're going to ensure that you can keep more of your money, that the state stops taking your money and wasting it, spraying it around without any regard for how hard you worked to earn it and your own interests. More than any party, we are going to take care with your money.
Unemployment has risen to its highest level in nearly 5 years. It increased slightly to 5.2% in the 3 months to December. And Royal Mail has been given 2 weeks to respond to claims that it's prioritising parcel deliveries over letters, causing delays across the network. The Business and Trade Committee has set the deadline for the firm to respond to a number of questions. Royal Mail says it is working to resolve some short-term disruption. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 32 at 10,505. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells going into the afternoon. Some rain for the southwest of England, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
OK, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Oh, 4 minutes after 12 is the time. We will be hearing a particularly poignant tribute to the civil rights leader Jesse Jackson before the end of this hour from a young British fella that he actually mentored. Well, when he was a young British fella, Jesse Jackson mentored him. I'm sure he won't hate me for suggesting he's not that young anymore. But what a speaker and what a figure as well. I want to do a boring phone-in. With your permission. I've got quite a lot to get through this hour. We're going to be joined by Joe Mulhall from Hope Not Hate, standing in for Henry Riley as we continue to scrutinise Nigel Farage's operation with the same levels of attention that the right-wing media brings to the Labour Party. And also, I do want Simon Woolley, or Lord Woolley, to you, to talk us through the contribution of and significance of Jesse Jackson. So, I mean, it isn't going to fill a whole hour, this phone-in. But when I say I want to have a boring phone-in, partly I'm reflecting the scepticism that my own producer expressed when I told them what I wanted to do on the programme about 3 weeks ago, and they successfully talked me out of it. And I partly mean it's a boring phone-in because it's, I think it's one of those ones where we possibly run the risk of every caller saying the same thing, and it will just turn out that I was being a bit dopey in framing the question in the first place. Or, and this is the bit I'm not sure, well, look, I keep telling you I'm about to do a boring phone-in. I think it's going to be really interesting. Everybody else thinks it's going to, I haven't checked with Keith, but apart from Keith, everybody else thinks it's going to be really boring. And I can't ask Keith what he thinks, because he, like you, doesn't know what the topic is yet. Because this is the first he's heard of it. So he doesn't know whether he doesn't even know whether he thinks it's going to be boring or not. I don't think it's going to be boring. But I see a risk of it all being a bit parking tickets. I don't know if you've ever listened to a radio phone-in programme about people who've received parking tickets that they thought were unfair, but I'm sure you'll believe me when I tell you that they are incredibly boring, with, like, one in a million
possible exceptions to the rule. In fact, we tried to do an hour once on parking tickets in search of stories that were actually worth telling, and I'm afraid we failed fairly miserably. So, what is the topic in the news today? I'll give you a clue. Fraser Knight's been all over it all day. Is that it? Have you got it yet? I'll give you another clue. There is actually some good news. I'll give you another clue. It is actually one of those areas where all of the nonsense online about London contains at least a tiny kernel of truth. Have you got it yet? Yeah, it's about phones. How many phones do you think are nicked a year? And of course, remember that if you want to claim for your phone on insurance, you have to record the theft. You have to get a crime number. So I don't think, and again, this could be me setting myself up for an embarrassment. I don't think the argument that, oh, well, there's loads more than that. People just don't bother reporting it anymore. That doesn't actually hold true when you're losing something valuable enough to need the insurance to replace it. Obviously, if you're not insured, then that is considerably less likely to be true. But if I said to you, how many phones do you think got nicked in London last year? Would you know even where to begin? I mean, what would you say, a million? Given the coverage that it gets, what would you say? Seriously? Half a million? A million? 2 million? What would you say? How many phones do you think it goes? The way that we talk about it and the way that it is reported and the way, of course, that all of the lies about the safety of London are perpetrated by various racists and weirdos online, and people who may not be racists or weirdos but have certainly never been anywhere near London recently. Given that narrative as well, you'd probably think it's been exaggerated. How many people are in London every year? How many of them have phones? How many get nicked? Must be, I don't know, what number? Go on, send me a number. 0345-6060-973 if you want to WhatsApp it. 84850 if you want to text it. The figure is 71,391. Down about 10,000 on the previous year. And I don't know why London is a more popular place for phone thieves to operate than any other city on the planet. That's probably a slight exaggeration, but we have a genuine problem with this, okay? A genuine problem. I don't know why. And I want you to tell me. So that's the boring phone-in that I think will actually be really interesting. It's fascinating how that varies. So Rob said 130,000. Michael said 400,000. Quite a few on 200,000. Everyone I know who has had a phone stolen doesn't bother reporting it because they don't have insurance, says Marley. So the figure could even be higher than that. But the bit I've never quite got my head around is what it is about London that makes this particular crime so popular. And let's work out what we know. So let's look at what we can say with some confidence. There's more of it going on. No prizes for that. Is there more confidence among perpetrators because of the lower likelihood of sanction? So are you less like, so really, I want to compare London to Paris, Berlin or New York or any other city of your choice, but it has to be a comparable city. Have we actually created this problem by advertising it? So if you were to go back to, I don't know, about 5 years ago or 10 years ago, the increase has been about threefold. So if I were a potential phone thief who hadn't actually thought about becoming a phone thief, would I now start thinking to myself, well, nicking phones looks pretty easy? And the second thing we know is that they are sold overseas increasingly. There's been some amazing reporting, including by London Centric, that magnificent website I keep telling you about thieves wrapping them in tinfoil and burying them in flower beds across London. So until they can be, so that means that your Find My iPhone thing doesn't work, and then they can be retrieved and stuck in a container and sent to China where they're sold. Mike in Wolverhampton wants to know, of those 70,000 stolen phones, James, do we know how many belong to Susan Hall? I shall put in a Freedom of Information request, Michael, at the first opportunity. So the bit I don't get is the London bit, because this isn't one of those areas where I have the great pleasure of pointing out that you're being lied to by a bunch of weirdos and racists on the internet.
and that London is a magnificent city. I was out in London on Valentine's Day on Saturday in the posh parts of town, and all of the supercars driving up and down with kids taking pictures of them. I went to a couple of fancy shops because it was Valentine's Day and I love my wife. And, probably the finest shopping streets in the world, to be honest with you. And certainly in the context of architecture as well as what you can get. This isn't one of those things where I point out the truth and the propaganda and the nonsense continues on online. This is one of the areas where there is some truth in it. That nicking phones in London is much more popular, or you're much more likely to get your phone nicked in London than you are almost anywhere else. And it's not true of other crimes. This is the bit that I don't get. So, violent crime has come down at a rate of knots in this city. And although they say they've cut thefts by 10,000, you know that with insurance and reporting things, it may not be the case. But the capita, the comparisons put London far and ahead of other cities. And that's the bit I don't understand, because there's not more criminality here. And on most graphs, criminality is coming down. Knife crime is coming down. Violent crime is coming down. There's not that murder has plummeted. So it's not that. Shoplifting has rocketed, of course, but not in ways that it hasn't in other places. Why would getting your phone nicked be more likely to happen in London than in other cities that have similar problems, similar demographics, similar socioeconomic splits, and similar crime figures on other areas, but on phones they go ahead? That's the question, all right? You haven't got long to answer it. 03456060973 is the number you need. Don't worry about being obvious. It can't be the case. Things that I don't think can be true is that we routinely carry more expensive phones than the average Parisian. That can't be true, can it? The average Berliner is not wandering around Berlin with a brick phone while the world and his wife in London have all got state-of-the-art iPhone. So why? And given that we know the resale value involves usually sending it overseas, that makes a mockery of the idea that one European city or one Western city would be a hotbed of this kind of crime in ways that other cities wouldn't be. That should actually see a spread right across Europe or right across the West of phones being nicked and sent to China to be repurposed and resold on. So the resale value is high, but the resale value of a phone nicked in London is not going to be higher than the resale value of a phone nicked in Barcelona. So why is that? Why in London would you be more likely to have your phone nicked? I'm looking at it from the criminal's point of view. Why is nicking phones a more popular pastime in London than it is in Paris, Berlin or Rome? 03456060973. Because pickpocketing isn't particularly higher here, but phone pinching is, and I don't understand why. The resale value must be the same, right? The value of the phone when it's nicked must be the same. The likelihood of getting caught must be similar. I'd have thought, I could be wrong. What happened when you got your phone nicked in France? Were the gendarmes chasing the culprit up and down the Champs-Élysées? I genuinely want to know. What is it about London that makes having your phone nicked a much more likely occurrence than almost any other city in the world? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 03456060973 is the number that you need. That's the question, because it can't be the resale value. What is it? Only phones, nothing else. This city, with your phone on the street, likelihood of getting it nicked higher than it is in other comparable cities. Still nowhere near as high as you'd think from looking at some of the coverage. But there must be an answer to this question. There must be an answer that's specific to London about why this happens more. And I don't know what it is. It's 12:15 and you, I hope, are about to tell me.
LBC.
Are you ready to celebrate the greatest stories?
And the BAFTA goes to
the big screen epics, the captivating tearjerkers, the animated masterpieces, tales that inspire, empower and move us.
I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. It means so much.
Join me, Alan Cumming, to discover this year's winners at the EE BAFTA Film Awards.
And the winner is
the EE BAFTA Film Awards. Watch this Sunday at 7 p.m.
turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's chicken and egg. Seriously, it's chicken and egg, and I want the chickens and the egg. So, is this true? In Paris, David says, if you're seen nicking someone's phone, the public will get involved. In London, people will just watch. Police also have do not chase orders for thieves on bikes. That's a little bit anecdotal. What's going to happen if I nick a phone in Paris and I'm on a bike? Are they really not going to come after? And also, where are all these gendarmerie that are supposedly populating the avenues and rues of... So do you see what I mean? So I like one answer I got. It's because we don't have a grid system in London. So in other cities, you don't need to consult your map function so much because there's a logic. New York is laid out in blocks. There's a logic to where you're going. In London, you can end up down some weird Victorian alleyway and come out miles away from where you thought. But I don't buy that. But these are the sort of answers I wanted. The more imaginative your answer is, the more I'm going to enjoy it. Although Shane has possibly imagined a bit too much when he writes, "We have more engineers, doctors and lawyers in this country, as we're important more, and they need more phones." I may have exaggerated my interest in unexpected answers, Shane. I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. But Scott speaks for many of you from West Hampstead. No, he's from West Hampstead. He's not just speaking for people from West Hampstead. He says, "I keep seeing idiots." He's got a Donald Trump facility with capital letters, "who walk the streets and cross the roads, quite oblivious of their surroundings. Those kinds of idiots bump into me on a daily basis because they don't know where they're going and they get their phone nicked. But I don't think that's more true in London than it is anywhere else." This is the point. What is it about London? Joanne's had a proper go. "London streets and pavements are narrower than almost every other big city." Is that even true? I guess the sort of the old bits are, but there are other European cities in particular that are just as old as London. And Paul says, "Is it the fact that the tube is widely available and provides people with the opportunity to make a quick getaway?" I quite like that. So do you see what I'm looking for now? I'm looking for things that are not immediately obvious that might explain why London is a hotspot for this very particular type of crime. Neil's in Croydon. Neil, what would you like to say?
I think, I don't know whether the right word is fear, but I think it's the fear factor. There's been for decades a fear factor more with the gendarmes and the Guardia Civil than there has with the British police. And I'm saying that as an ex-British police officer.
They're armed.
And, what do you mean?
The French police are armed, aren't they? You get off the train at Gare du Nord and the first thing you see is a submachine gun.
Yeah, so they've got the gendarmes and then they've got the national police. So they have different levels of policing as well in France and also in Spain. So the exact same as the gendarmes, they're like almost a paramilitary police force.
So they don't nick phones in France because they're frightened of getting shot?
Oh, they do nick phones in France, but there will be more fear because the consequences will be far more severe. And you will probably be likely to get locked up 100% even on the first offence. As opposed to here, you might get a fine or a community order or something like that.
Are we sure about this?
Yeah.
You're going to get, for your first offence, nicking a phone in France, you'll be sent to jail?
Probably, yeah.
No, hang on. When I said sure, officer, the answer can't be probably, can it? You can't say yes, probably.
No.
In response, if you were in court and you were consulting your notes, I would remind you now that you just said yes when I said, are you sure? And then moments later, you said probably.
But it's down to the court what they decide.
But you just told me it's much more likely to get locked up for nicking one phone on your first... I mean, you might be right, and if you are, you know, we'll ring a bell and give you a biscuit. Yeah. But it seems unlikely to me.
And in regards to the message
right,
you read
on
out,
with press. Go on.
I would argue that running down onto an underground isn't going to be a bit of a rat run. You're going to be all over CCTV. You're more likely to get caught running down onto an underground train. These people that nick the phones in London tend to be swishing past people on bikes or these electric scooters.
Yeah,
and stuff
I think the bikes. I think that's true. Hands. The bikes are a big one. And why would that be more popular in London than elsewhere? Because other cities are built the same, aren't they? They're more likely to be on bikes than tubes. So I think we'll cancel out the tube. I mean, remember, these people aren't claiming that they're definitely right. They're just offering up theories and ideas. So we'll nix the tube one, because you're right, that doesn't make sense. But the bike ones, why would London lend itself more to theft by bike than other cities?
I think people are able to get hold of these Lime bikes quite easily, aren't they? I've seen a lot on YouTube and stuff of people nicking them, and they're on these Lime bikes.
They're not fast enough, mate. I could catch someone on a Lime bike on foot. They've got the ones with the souped up little electric engines. Listen, I can't have a pop at you for thinking out loud, but I'm not sure getting banged up for your first offence is quite the deterrent that we might imagine. And even if it was true in one European city, it wouldn't be true in the other ones. Knowing that you're not going to be pursued by the public is the most depressing answer, because that, of course, makes it our fault that this happens. There was a robbery in Richmond recently from a jeweller's. I was talking to Mrs. O'Brien about it at the weekend. He tore the window out of the jewellery shop, because we know Richmond quite well. It's near where we live. And then ran off to the waiting getaway car. There's an interesting parking tickets topic for you. Why did the waiting getaway car not get a parking ticket? It had been there for 3 or 4 days, and no one followed, as far as I could tell. People were filming this, like, full-on robbery in full swing, but nobody actually followed the perpetrators. But I don't think that's peculiar to London or to Richmond or even to the UK. So why? Layla's in Kettering. Layla, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. A long-time listener, first-time caller. To give you a bit of context, I'm Moroccan, but I was born and raised in Barcelona, so okay. I spent most of my life there. Moved to the UK 6 years ago, and one of the first things I said to my mum when I came here is, I feel safe. I do not have to be watching my wallet all the time. I do not have to be watching my phone. Yes. Something that I have to do in Barcelona, even now when I go to see my parents quite often, is if my phone is on my pocket, my hand has to be there. And in London...
I was on a stag weekend a few years ago, and a mate of mine got robbed on Las Ramblas.
Exactly. And it's quite wide, so the streets are not that narrow, and it still happens, and in my opinion, it happens much more than in London.
Very crowded. I mean, you'd need to compare population size with phone theft prevalence. So you're disputing the facts. You're disputing the statistics. And I agree with you on everything except phones. London is much safer than an awful lot of other cities, and nothing like what is portrayed by various racists and weirdos on the internet. But I do think you're more likely to have your phone nicked here than you are in Barcelona.
Oh, in that thing, I would disagree with you. I think I'm more likely to get nicked there than in London, and I'm not even keeping an eye for it in here.
Well, I like that. Maybe Barcelona, specific parts of Barcelona as opposed to the whole of London. Do you fight our corner, Layla, with your, like, people? There's an extraordinary piece in one of the magazines this week about somebody ending up in the middle of nowhere, like Ulaanbaatar, and someone said, oh, crikey, you're from London, it's really unsafe there, isn't it? Do you fight our corner? Do you tell your friends back in Spain that what they're seeing on the internet bears no resemblance whatsoever to the reality of actually living here?
I do tell them. They keep on telling me that they see things online.
Yes.
How can I be living in the UK? They feel so unsafe. And in my opinion, it's completely the opposite. I feel much safer here than the place I grew up in.
I'm not surprised. Although, I think on phones, you'd probably lose that bit of the argument, but not on all the other measures. We haven't mentioned technology yet. Thank you, Layla. We haven't mentioned technology yet. The simple question of whether we could do more but don't. So if you get your phone nicked elsewhere in the world, do they do something? Do the phone providers? I mean, that would be the question that actually shut this debate down for once and for all. You actually can't sell on a phone, but somehow, for some reason, if it's nicked in London, you can. Khalil is in Kensington. Khalil, what would you like to say?
Thank you very much, James. Nice to talk to you. I'm always listening to you.
Thank you, mate.
But I think his problem is in London. I'm working one of the very busy places in London, and I'm a witness every single weekend pickpocketing. And there is no police because when we talk with the council said, oh, we are short of the budget. We don't have enough money. And in 4 weeks, we have once a week or two times a week. On Saturday and Friday, we have police. And the rest...
So visible police would be a deterrent. There's actually police literally on the street in uniform, whether they're carrying a gun or not. I'm less likely to nick your phone if there's a copper on the next corner.
I mean, to be honest, even the crowd is very big, about 70 or 50,000 pounds, they say, roughly visiting this place Friday and Saturday. But maybe 10 or 15 police is not enough. So when I see the regular pickpocket, and I stop him personally, and I take phone from them. When I show the police said, oh, where's the evidence? Do you have a photo or do you have a picture? And I don't have no time to leave my job to follow the pickpocket, take a photo and take a picture, show the police, and then police arrested him. But the guy coming same, regular, every single week.
And I mean, whether or not things would be different in other cities, we don't know. I mean, genuinely.
Possible. No, I don't know. But another thing is that most of these people, they are pickpocketing. They are not originally from London, as I can see. And the people who they're losing also, they are not from, they are most tourists. 90%, they're attacking tourists, especially Middle East, you know, the Japanese.
Well, that's going to be contingent on where you are. Awful lot of phone theft. The pictures, the footage I see on social media usually involves professional gangs of Eastern European pickpockets that people have made a sort of little hobby or an online channel out of pursuing. But we don't know whether London is worse than other cities. So, you know, Layla is from Barcelona. She says Barcelona is worse. It's what happens to the phone after it's nicked. If there's any difference there, that's going to be the most obvious answer. What do you sell, Khalil?
When you come to, I show you.
Well, that's an invitation I'm probably going to have to resist. Thank you, Khalil. It's coming up to 12:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The stats are weird on this, and the Metropolitan Police is reporting today that numbers are down. So even if you wanted to look at the question of are people bothering to report it, well, the overall numbers of reported crimes are down 10,000 year on year. So there's no more likelihood of them not reporting it this year than last year. So you're looking at a decline. There's another story published today involving children as young as 14 being recruited to nick the phones. Fraser Knight, as you probably heard earlier on the programme, has been out on a sting operation with the Metropolitan Police, who are clearly somewhat belatedly taking this a lot more seriously than they used to. But I don't know why a phone thief has a better time of it in London than they do in other cities. I don't know why. Maybe they don't. Maybe we have almost created the problem by talking about it so much. So that if you were a thief thinking of nicking phones, you'd think, oh, London looks like rich pickings. I'll go there instead of somewhere. I don't know. Or if you were just a wrong un looking for a way to make a few crooked quids, you'd move on from whatever it was you were doing before and decide to do some phone theft or phone robbery instead. I genuinely don't know. I don't know that I'm a heck of a lot clearer now than I was before, but I remember Theresa May telling the Police Federation that they were scaremongering when they suggested that reducing the number of police officers on the street would increase the amount of crime. And I remember thinking at the time that she'd taken leave of her senses. But of course, that's relative. And given some of the people that followed her into Downing Street, Theresa May now looks like a paragon of sanity. Here's Matt Hewitt with your headlines.
The government is resisting calls to sack the local government secretary, Steve Reid, over the U-turn on English local elections, which will now go ahead. 30 councils had provided evidence that postponing the votes would help them deliver a streamlining of local government. Nigel Farage says Reform UK is preparing for government as he names his top team. Ex-Tories Robert Jenrick and Suella Braverman have been given the economy and education briefs, respectively. And the American civil rights activist Reverend Jesse Jackson has died at the age of 84. He twice ran for the Democratic presidential nomination and cast himself as a breaker of barriers for people of colour, the impoverished and the powerless. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England, highs of 1 to 8 degrees.
We've joined with Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB, to support our extraordinary athletes at the Milano Cortina 2026 Olympic Winter Games. It's not just Team GB showing amazing determination. We've been asking you to share your extraordinary feats for a chance to win £1,000. We've already had some entries from people like Amber, who, when she was training as a vet, calmly climbed into and cleaned a 21-foot python's enclosure on her own, with the snake still present. For your chance to win £1,000, share with us your extraordinary feats at, that's feats plural, at lbc.co.uk.
This is LBC. Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes. Through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment, Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to write arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to GOSH Charity. Search GOSH Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
Daniel liked how easy it was to transfer his old pensions to PensionBee.
I've had quite an eclectic career, and with that I'd amassed pensions from a couple of different providers. I signed up using the app. It was really straightforward. I was able to give them a couple of key facts about each of my pensions, and then PensionBee did the rest of the work for me.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big Motoring World, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
12:34 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Henry Riley's off this week, as you may have heard. He's on annual leave, which is a shame because we launched a new feature last week, and it was a feature dedicated to discovering what would happen if any members of the media dedicated as much attention to scrutinising Nigel Farage's outfit as all the right-wing media does to scrutinising Keir Starmer's party and government. And somewhat unexpectedly, we unearthed 22 stories last week alone across 5 days. So we've invited a veritable panoply, which is like a posh word for potpourri, of people to step into Henry's flip-flops this week and talk us through other stories involving perhaps a coterie of characters to step into Henry's flip-flops and talk us through stories that are perhaps not receiving the same levels of attention that you might expect. And it is Joe Mulhall, the Director of Research at the excellent organisation Hope Not Hate, who joins us today to talk us through some findings. I'm a big fan of these new media media organisations that are springing up and are run, to coin a phrase, by the people, for the people. I love the Birmingham Dispatch, which I subscribed to this weekend, and one of the first to break out was The Mill up in Manchester, who reported on the research that you have conducted, Joe, into some of the people, shall we say, helping or abetting the attempt by Matthew Goodwin to become the new MP for Gorton and Denton in the imminent by-election. And, of course, a full list of candidates in that by-election is available at lbc.co.uk. So what did you find, Joe Mulhall?
Well, perhaps a little bit, well, perhaps unsurprisingly, considering if you look at the extreme views of Matt Goodwin himself, when we started to look into the individuals that were involved in the campaign, that had been out campaigning with him on the doorstep, that had been taking pictures with him, it didn't take long before we found some pretty extreme characters. I mean, we think Farage and we think Reform and we think Matthew Goodwin are a far-right party, but we were even perhaps a little bit surprised by how extreme some of the rhetoric was coming from some of the individuals that had been out and about with Matt Goodwin. I mean, not just people that were saying, as you would expect from Reform, about immigration, etc., but we were finding people minimising the Holocaust, using the N-word, supporting Andrew Tate, really extreme kind of anti-Muslim views from people. And of
it's going to sound entirely ridiculous, given what you've just told us about what you found, but I think they would still reject the description of their own party as far right. But I guess that gets harder and harder to do the more material such as what you've just alluded to. Just run through that list again, if you would, Joe.
Holocaust denial, the use of the N-word, support for the really violent misogynist Andrew Tate, you know, extreme anti-Muslim views. And I understand why Reform do understandably regularly push back on this characterization as far right, and I've no doubt Matthew Goodwin would as well. But unfortunately, definitions of what is and is not far right exist. You know, there is vast amounts of scholarship on this. And even though that they're larger and more successful than any far right party we've ever had in Britain, unfortunately for them, they fit really comfortably within those definitions. I mean, Matthew Goodwin himself, when he's talked about how he defines Englishness, for example, there is a racial component to the way he defines it. You know, he's talked for a ban on immigration from Islamic countries. These are policies and ideas that it's very difficult to find a way that isn't far right.
That would be problematic for Nadeem Zahawi's family, wouldn't it? I think he comes from Iraq.
It would be problematic for a number of senior figures within Reform. And this is one of the things that will be really interesting to see the people of Gorton and Denton, you know, where there's of course, many people whose heritage comes from Islamic countries, how they would feel about an MP that, if he does win, has said that he would ban immigration, and he's talked very disparagingly about the Muslim community in Britain.
So how, can we expect candidates to know the backgrounds of everybody who's on the doorstep with them? I know Nigel Farage told us not long ago that he was going to be vetting candidates. Because they ended up with one in the House of Commons, of course, who'd done time for battering his ex-girlfriend while claiming to be the party that protects our women and girls. Although I believe he was a white man, so presumably that sort of violence is less toxic to some of his then colleagues than if he hadn't been white. I mean, how realistic is it to expect candidates seeking election to Parliament to know the backgrounds of the people that are door knocking with them or out on the doorsteps with them?
Well, I don't think we're necessarily arguing that we would expect a parliamentary candidate to have a full background check on everyone who canvasses with them or volunteers for them or works with them. I think the real question is, why is it individuals who have this extreme politics want to campaign for Matthew Goodwin and Reform? Why is it that he's attracting individuals that have engaged in such extreme behaviour? Why is it that they think he's their man, that this is their party? I don't think it's about saying that he has to vet everyone that comes. It's that a normal candidate doesn't attract people that minimise the Holocaust. It doesn't attract people that flippantly use the N-word on social media or engage in such extreme anti-Muslim behaviour. He has to answer, not that how he knows these people. He has to answer why it is that they think he is the man for them.
And do we know whether or not any action has been taken against any of these people who are named in your research and indeed in the Mill reporting since your findings were made available, since your findings were shared?
No, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, I've not seen anything. And this is one of the really scary things about reform is, I mean, you'll remember if you go back over the last 2 years, there was a time when groups like Hope Not Hate or other journalistic groups would highlight extreme individuals linked to the party, and we would expect some action to be taken. Unfortunately, those days just don't seem to have been long gone now. I mean, we regularly highlight even candidates that have engaged in really extreme rhetoric, and increasingly no action is taken against them. I think they feel that they're large enough and confident enough now that they can brush this away. And, it, you know, and you can't get away from the fact that clearly in some cases they think that these people, it's no problem, or they don't think that what they've said
is... this is
extreme.
Context, isn't it? So for context, do we have any idea why Adam Mitula, the campaign manager for Matthew Goodwin in Tameside, reportedly posted that he would never touch a Jewish woman? He also reportedly used the N-word online and played down the Holocaust. Did he explain, this man, why he would never touch a Jewish woman, or did he just throw that out into the ether for the amusement of his followers?
Well, no, I mean, and what's really, really worrying about him is there is a huge amount of really, really extreme content. I mean, you mentioned that we found he'd used the N-word. He'd questioned the number of Jews that died in the Holocaust. I mean, this is stuff that we would find in neo-Nazi circles, you know, in explicitly fascist groups. This is where we would have traditionally found it. Not someone who is so closely linked to a candidate and a party that is currently topping the polls in the UK. It's a really scary sign of how normalized and mainstream stuff that previously was really confined to the very margins of our politics, and the lack of action as a result of it. And the other really extreme thing with him is support for Andrew Tate that he's produced on social media. And we know that misogyny has always been a fundamental element of the far right. But this is what I think we're in such scary times, is that someone like this can be so linked to Goodwin, so linked to reform, and there isn't the outrage that there used to have been. We're poor in media action. We would have traditionally published something about this, and this person would be long gone because they know that they're not allowed. But those days don't seem to be there anymore.
And you, pardon the pun, but you also track migration between some of the avowedly far right and racist parties and Matthew Goodwin's support team. Kelly Cooling, photographed campaigning with him, reportedly supporting Britain First as recently as last summer. Are you seeing more? For people who don't know about the work that Hope Not Hate does, they have been investigating and reporting on fascism and far right movements and Islamist extremism and all manner of other threats to our general sort of public safety, really, for a very, very long time now. So you have, or Joe and his colleagues have, a background to draw on when I ask questions like, are we seeing more migration between traditionally toxic organisations and Nigel Farage's party?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Cooling, obviously, who'd been involved with Britain First, and Britain First is a very extreme movement that's very anti-Muslim, that is also increasingly overtly racial nationalists, etc. But absolutely, I mean, if you go back to the last general election, a large number of what you might call tiny little groups that are very extreme, fascist groups, all kind of at the time said, just support reform. When a party on the far right or on the radical right becomes large enough, they exert a gravitational pull across the wider movement. And ostensibly, people that might be more extreme than reform still see them as the best bet. So you do see individuals from across the far right flood into these things. But it's not just that they say it's the best bet. If you look at a lot of reform's policies about immigration, migration, the numbers of people they talk about removing, these are policies that traditionally would have been far-right policies. They would have been in far-right parties. And I think it goes back to this, why is it that these people think that Goodwin and Reform are their man and their party? It's because a lot of the rhetoric sits comfortably within these parties that traditionally would have been tiny little far-right parties that no one, thankfully, would have really heard of.
And I'd remind my listeners of two things. Firstly, that a full list of candidates in Gorton and Denton is available at lbc.co.uk. And, of course, that I think they still would resist the description of their own party, the Reform UK people, as being far right. Joe Mulhall, thank you. We reached out to some of the people that are mentioned in the report that I've mentioned in this conversation. We haven't received a response from either Adam Mitula or Kelly Cooling. And either Matthew Goodwin or Reform, when we asked them for comment, sent us a retweet of a reply he sent to Lucy Powell from the deputy leader of the Labour Party. For I don't know whether that was done by accident or whether there is something that I'm missing. So we asked him to respond to these points, and he responded by sending us a picture of a tweet he sent to Lucy Powell claiming that he rejects all extremism, but not addressing any of the questions posed by the presence of these people with their Holocaust dilution and "I would never touch a Jewish woman" comments appearing not just, of course, on the doorstep with him, but in the case of that latter character, his actual campaign manager in Tameside. It's 12:46. Hey, who needs Henry Reilly, eh?
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
What did Andrew Windsor's security detail really know? Nigel Farage insists Reform UK isn't a one-man band as he unveils his would-be cabinet. And a minute to save your phone.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Okay, done. Move that and... Oh, new ways to invest. Okay. Fraud-proof, guaranteed returns. Invest today. All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11am. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time, and that will resonate. You should hold on to that comment Joe just made about finding stuff out about some of the people on the stoop in a by-election that would once have merited a lot more attention from the corners of the media that until relatively recently used to abhor obvious and blatant racism, but who now barely raise an eyebrow. Do you know, it was only in 2014 that Nigel Farage's comments about Romanians were described as obviously racist by the Sun newspaper. I don't imagine they'll have anything to say about some of the people campaigning for his candidate in Gorton and Denton. A full list of candidates is available at lbc.co.uk, expressing vile anti-Semitism and having past associations with avowedly far-right and fascist parties. It's a mark of how much things are changing. And it's a change that we track on this programme with great sadness, but also, of course, with hope. And one of the greatest emblems of that sort of hope of recent years was the American civil rights activist and politician Jesse Jackson, whose family have announced today that he has passed away. Have a little listen to him in action, because we often moan about the lack of oratorical quality on the public stage at the moment. There is nothing missing here.
I am black, beautiful, proud, I must be respected.
That was in 1972, 53 years before Donald Trump began his second term as the US president. And we'll fast forward to 1988 when at the Democratic National Convention in Atlanta, he urged US citizens, again, something that assumes a new poignancy in the context of what's going on in the States at the moment, to search for common ground. Part of his second presidential campaign, and it saw the New York Times call 1988 the year of Jackson.
When you see Jesse Jackson, when my name goes in nomination, your name goes in nomination. I was born in the slum, but the slum was not born in me. And it wasn't born in you, and you can make it. Wherever you are tonight, you can make it.
Simon, now, Lord Woolley is a crossbench peer, one of the founders of Operation Black Vote, and I'm afraid I was today years old, Simon, when I discovered a close friend and former mentee of the late Jesse Jackson. How did your paths cross?
I guess like many, I first saw the great man, as probably you did, on TV, you know, with that iconic picture when his mentor was murdered. And you see him looking at the balcony, pointing at the shooter. That's when I first saw him. And then I saw him as the clips that you highlighted on the campaign trail, both in 83, 84, and 88. And he was clearly the best candidate on any slate. Fast talking, big afro, charismatic, awe-inspiring. And I said, I want to be like that guy. And years later, I got 30 years ago, I got to meet him in Chicago, and I said, I'm running an organization called Operation Black Vote. We model ourselves on Dr. King and your campaign to get people registered to vote. Will you come to the UK? He said, what's your name? I said, Simon Woolley. Brother Woolley, when do you want me there? And there began a friendship, a sense of camaraderie and collaboration that lasted until my last conversation with him in December, when his daughter Jacqueline put me on the phone. He was not well. It was his last days in many ways. And I said to him, sir, I need you to know that the man that I have become today as the first black man heading a Oxbridge College and with a title and with some meaning is in no small measure because of you mentoring me. You giving me the belief that, as he would often say in his call and response, I am somebody, and you would say back, I am somebody. You made me feel like I was somebody, sir. And I promise you this, I will carry on your legacy, and I will try to raise people up. I will try to bring people together. I will try to ensure that the leaders of today are not self-serving, but serve our society.
Well, you speak of today, and you honour Jesse's memory there, Simon, for which I thank you. But how, I'm interested, if I may, in the difference between the public persona with which we're all familiar with, and the private man who you knew, and also the question of hope. How, I don't know what when you put the pin in the calendar, but the sense that perhaps the momentum for change and for civil rights that he represented as much as anybody, with the possible exception, as you mentioned, of his own mentor, Dr. King, Martin Luther King, how would he process the sense, the widespread sense at the moment, that things have gone into an unexpected reverse on this front?
Talked about that too. Talked about that too a couple of years ago. And he would say to me, Brother Woolley, I need you now more than ever. Because the forces of evil are truly, truly against us. And I've never seen a time since the 60s in which those forces seek to divide us, to the targeting of poor white people to be against poor black people, he said, has never been so vibrant and so acceptable. So remember what I taught you. Remember what I asked you to believe. And, you know, that this sense of when you talk about the private and the public – is that there's little distinction. The essence between it is service. The essence is duty. What are we here for? How do you get true life's enrichment? And I now tell students here at one of the best education academies in the world, look, I want you to have the what I call the Willy Wonka ticket, the golden ticket. But as Jackson taught me, the only question is, what are you going to do with it? And we need a generation of leaders who are not hell-bent on filling their boots and being puffed up and entitled. You know about that. You've written about that. You've written about them. But we need a generation of leaders who literally want to serve and speak for those who are least able or least empowered. This is, you know, to me, James, this is a very sorrowful day.
Of course.
Because I've lost a dear friend. I've lost my mentor. And yet it's also a joyous day because we're reminded about the things that are important in life, the things that are important in public duty. Because if you said it in your introduction, we are now in a space in which people can talk in terms of abhorrent racism, and it is so normalized that we think, many young people may think, this is how it's always been, and it hasn't.
That's beautifully put. I presume you bonded over sport a bit as well. I didn't realise he could have joined the Chicago White Sox, but decided instead to focus on his education.
He was an athlete. He was what every young black man wanted to be. He was, you know, tall. He was handsome. He was athletic. He was fast-talking. He was charismatic. And yet, of course, he knew that he was, like all of us, James, somewhat flawed. And yet he drew back to the essence of what he was meant to be, a warrior fighting against injustice, a campaigner to lift the spirits of the downtrodden. And, as we chatted, we've had some good conversations, by the way. You should recall the one that we had in 2016 after Brexit, which was
proved wrong about everything, Simon.
It was a seminal moment when we had that German lady talk about the way that excrement had been put through our house. But, you know, this today is one of those moments, one of our conversations in which we're reminded of what public service can be. Mm. We're reminded about, as he would say to his audience, look no further than the man and the woman in the mirror for who should be at the forefront of change. And so it is sorrowful, but it is joyous because it is that quintessential reminder about what public service can be.
Beautifully put. As always, Simon, now Lord Woolley, many thanks indeed. I'm really grateful to you for finding time to talk to us today on what is obviously a moment of great personal poignancy for you, never mind the public impact of the passing of the late Reverend Jesse Jackson, civil rights campaigner par excellence. And also, talking of sport, which is one of the great uniters, of course, if you've not seen his comparison of being a quarterback to running political campaigns, then I urge you to dig out the Washington Post interview from 1984 in which he does that in poetic fashion. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or on the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day, and Full Disclosure, I'm very proud of my long-form interview series. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. At 3 today, loads of us have had a phone stolen, I'm sure, or certainly worry about it. LBC's Fraser Nelson, no... We'll get there in the end. Looks at your chances of getting it back. Apologies to Fraser, I always get it wrong. They're slim, by the way. Nigel Farage has announced his would-be cabinet as one of their supporters. Charlie Mullins talks jobs and AI. The world is changing, but are you? But we start with an LBC exclusive on royal protection. We've been talking for ages about what Andrew Mountbatten Windsor did and knew, and what his close protection with him all times, day and night, would have inevitably known or not known. Are they being protected too? I'll be joined by Andy Hughes in just a second.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. Local election staff are warning they face an uphill battle to be ready for voting in May following a government climb down. Plans to delay polling day in 30 council areas of England for a local government reorganisation have been abandoned after ministers received new legal advice. The Lib Dem MP for North Norfolk is Steph Aquarone.
Of all the government U-turns, this is surely the most farcical, but it's good news for the people in my constituency and across the country who are going to have their voices heard this May. It's totally scandalous that they even got to this stage. It's been a long-fought campaign. I think it is a victory.
Al Sharpton has described his friend and fellow civil rights activist, Jesse Jackson, as a consequential and transformative leader following his death, aged 84. The Baptist leader was known for his close association with Martin Luther King Jr. in the 1960s and twice running for the Democrats' presidential nomination. Robert Jenrick has been named as Reform UK's economic spokesman. He defected from the Conservatives after being sacked by Kemi Badenoch. Nigel Farage has previously criticised the Cabinet's level of private sector experience. Mr Jenrick, a former auction house boss, says that's not something he lacks.
I only worked in the private sector before coming into Parliament. I worked in the city as a lawyer. I worked in business, helping to run a great British business. And I've served in government and around the Cabinet table, including in the Treasury. I'm proud of what I've done. I believe I bring experience to this team.
The Lib Dems say Mr Jenrick voted for Liz Truss's economic disaster of a mini-budget, and now he wants to do the same damage to the economy all over again. Richard Tice, Suella Braverman and Zia Youssef have been given the Deputy PM, Education and Home Office portfolios, respectively. The Metropolitan Police will be able to force officers and staff to declare whether they are or have been Freemasons. A legal challenge against the policy has been thrown out by a High Court judge who said it serves a legitimate aim and is proportionate. And police in London are now using their e-bikes and drones to chase after phone thieves. They say the number of mobiles being snatched has fallen by more than 12% since 2024. The Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, says he wants to reduce that further.
We know, unfortunately, there are far too many phones being stolen in London. Yes, it's great. We've managed to have 10,000 fewer phones stolen in 2025 versus 2024, but it's still too high.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 34 points at 10,508. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, rain in the southwest of England and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
With a Little Plus Bakery Spin, you can get a free bakery coupon every time you shop. Just scan Little Plus at the checkout, spin, win, and enjoy a free bakery item. Mmm, Little, more to value. One spin per customer per day, subject to availability, ends 25th of Feb, 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/LPTV.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We've been talking a lot lately, haven't we, about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. But it isn't a story just about one man, it's also a story about a system. That system primarily, I guess, being the monarchy and the role that he had in it. But there are bigger systems around the monarchy and bigger systems around members of the royal family, notably the Metropolitan Police and Close Protection Officers. Lots of you have said throughout this story and the telling of it, what about the police? What about the security guards around him? What about the Metropolitan Police officers who would have been around him all the time? What do they know? Surely they knew. Surely they should have spoken up. Well, we've got somewhere on that, a little way anyway. There's a great deal more to know. But Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent and co-host of Global's podcast, The Crime Agents, has an exclusive story involving conversations he has had with a former Metropolitan police officer who knows a thing or two about the operations, about the culture. He, to be clear, he wasn't a close protection officer to Andrew himself.
He wasn't, no, but he worked in that unit. So how it works, Sheila, is every single member of the royal family, they will have their own protection team. These are highly trained specialist officers from the Metropolitan Police. And really, it was the release of the Epstein files earlier this month that compelled an officer to speak to me. He told me that the Royal Protection Unit, certain members, became too close to the royal family, including Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, and may have withheld crucial information, he said, about what they witnessed on Jeffrey Epstein's private island. We do know that the former prince visited Epstein's island on at least two occasions. On one of those occasions in the year 2000, it was there where Virginia Giuffre, the late Virginia Giuffre, alleged that she was forced to have sex with Andrew. Andrew has always denied this and has always denied any criminality. We're protecting the identity of this former protection officer who spoke to us. But this is what he said, and his voice is played by an actor.
I certainly thought that a line was crossed to the point that we were concerned that information was being withheld from the police. They seemed more loyal to the royal family than to the Met, and that's wrong. The big question for me is what Andrew's protection team witnessed on Epstein Island. I'm not suggesting they witnessed any criminality from Andrew, but there was concern that certain members of the royal protection team willfully turned a blind eye to what was happening on the island.
Just to be clear, are they always armed if they are close protection teams?
Yes, they're all armed and they're all specially trained in firearms, and quite often that's how they start, and then they make their way to royal protection. The thing that really stuck out for me is that this officer said that this unit and members of it, they seemed more loyal to the royal family than the Met. And this is where real concerns started. Also, they started noticing the behaviour of these officers who were protecting the royal family. For example, they started to wear signet rings and they started to behave more like royal. The officer said to me, they were more royal than the royals. So this kind of gives you an indication into how this unit operates. And also, Sheila, one very notable thing is that this unit seemed to operate under a cloud of fear. And the reason for that was there were some occasions where a royal protection officer would report a member of the royal family and their behaviour. The very next day, on more than one occasion, the officer that reported that was then effectively dismissed from the unit and put back in uniform as a punishment.
And, you know, on a human level, you can see how doing that particular job, you don't want the principal, as they call the person that they're protecting, you don't want the principal to feel like you're a police officer breathing down their neck, you're not giving them any personal space, you know. You would have to approach that with some human deftness, wouldn't you, and friendliness and all of that. But the role is so specifically about being able to switch in a moment to protecting them that you would expect the person in the protective role to keep a distance.
Yeah.
Psychologically distance. Well,
and that's what this officer said to me. That's what you're taught on the first day of training school. Remember that you are a police officer. You are not